the high desert and the great American Southwest. This is Coast to Coast AM, heard across 24 time zones. That would be the world as we know it. I'm Art Bell, and it's great to be here. Lots of news for you tonight. In the next hour, it's going to be kind of interesting because, you know, I've been around the world of paranormal for a long time now. Kicking around here for a long time, right? And I think I know about most things, but tonight, I'll tell you the truth. I don't know a daggone thing about the Mothman prophecies. Now, we are going to have the very honorable, the guy to have under the circumstances, I am told, John A. Keel. John A. Keel on, and he's going to be talking about the Mothman prophecies. Now, I don't know anything about Mothman. I know there's a big movie about to be released, of course. Big one. And I will, of course, see that. But I really don't know about the Mothman, so we'll all learn about that together. It's one that just through the years somehow escaped me. Weird, huh? The news, let's see. The UN Secretary General Kofi Annan arrived in the Afghan capital, so they get the UN chief there now, huh? John Walker Lind faces U.S. government charges today. He's home now, of course, nearly 2 months after his capture, that he conspired to kill fellow Americans in Afghanistan. So they're going to be working on an interesting legal strategy. I guess they're going to say, you know, he wasn't read his rights and all the rest of it, and didn't get a lawyer, didn't get representation. That's going to be, I think, their case. And yet I'm told he both vocally and in writing waived his right to a lawyer, which will, I'm sure, be the prosecution's case. And if he did it in writing, why... Seems to me legally that's over, but, you know, that's for the courts. The fired auditor, here it is, Enron. In fact, the Enron story has now fulfilled some stupid little prediction I made when the first one appeared, that it was going to be like another Watergate. Now it's Enron, everywhere. Anyway, the fired auditor, David Duncan, was solely responsible for the massive destruction of Enron documents. Officials of the energy company's accounting firm told skeptical lawmakers today, I'm sure they were skeptical. One man did it. Here he is. That's the way the world works, you know. That's just the way it works. President Bush asked Congress for $38 billion. We need a lot of money. He said that we have great weapons, that we have, in fact, incredible weapons, specific for the job we've been doing in Afghanistan. You know, bombs that go up your nostril and explode. They need pinpoint stuff, but they're very expensive. $38 billion he would like for more nostril bombs. And then there was a pretty weird head shaker that took place today. A school bus driver loaded with a loaded rifle took 13 children on what appeared to be a six-hour kidnapping, and oh my God, what a horror story that must have been. It did end in another state when he turned himself in to police. None of the children were hurt, but my God, can you imagine the period of time when he had them, you know, with a loaded rifle? There's intent there when you have a gun, a lot of intent, and it must have been absolutely horrific for the parents. Here's a kind of interesting email I received from David Kagan. Do you know who David Kagan is? He's the author of Sunstroke, which I refer to frequently. The Japanese, as I told you, are getting ready to put a energy-gathering satellite up, which will beam with microwave, apparently. You know, remember I was wondering about that? I said, I bet it's microwave. And the guy who wrote the book about this, David Kagan, writes, Dear Art, I thoroughly enjoyed your Dean Koontz interview on last night's program, and I am riveted by George Zeiler's report on Stan Romanek's astounding encounters with UFOs. The number two video really is amazing. I'm intrigued by the bizarre... Anyway, let's see. Thank you so much for mentioning my novel, Sunstroke, on last night's broadcast in relation to Japan's NASDA solar demonstration satellite. My NASA contacts have confirmed their satellite will indeed be utilizing concentrated microwaves to beam solar energy to a receiving antenna on Earth. More power to them. We can only hope their fail-safe devices that are supposed to kick in during a malfunction are more efficient than the ones I wrote about in the book. Otherwise, God help us all. David Kagan. Yes, indeed. All kinds of interesting news. I would like you to go to my website. In fact, that would be a good idea right now, and there's a photograph that I want you to see. Despite some recent disinformation-type articles, the fact of the matter is the Antarctica is melting. And tonight I have visual evidence for you. It's an article on Yahoo. And I think you'll find this absolutely fascinating, frightening. This really is scary. It's very legitimate science. And under the photograph, which, by the way, when you get to the story, it's under What's New about the Antarctic melting or whatever. I forget the title. Go to the article and then click on the photograph itself to see the full-size picture. This is really scary. Under the picture, it says one of the most remote spots on the planet, Cygni Island off Antarctica, is providing scientists with a pristine natural laboratory to gauge the environmental consequences of rising global temperatures. Writing in the journal Science, British and Canadian scientists said on Thursday, that's this Thursday, folks, today, a 20-year study revealed dramatic changes in lakes on Cygni Island caused by a 1.8 degrees Celsius rise in air temperature. This increase triggered a series of changes in the lakes on the island, 435 miles northwest of the Antarctic Peninsula. Scientists hope polar lakes to be early detectors of change wrought by global warming, and so it is. Wait till you see this. In the Antarctic, water, water everywhere. Things that should be absolutely solidly frozen are now water. And when you look at this photograph, it's pretty scary stuff. Because if I'm guessing right, and I think I am guessing right, the rate of change that we're going to get is going to rapidly accelerate. It has become my view that we are indeed on the edge of a rapid climate change. And there are a lot of implications for that. But I feel very strongly it's underway right now, and this photograph is evidence of it. Other evidence is going to come in very worrisome ways. The sea levels, should this occur, are going to rise very, very dramatically. And many people who are above water now would not, under those circumstances, be above water any longer. They'd be down there so far, they'd be wondered about by the next civilization. So, with what's going on in the sun and the now scientifically verified effects occurring here on Earth with the rising temperature, there are interesting things that are beginning to happen. This photograph is pretty good stuff. You might want to take a look at the bottom of the world. eyes to reject strong adjacent signals and to receive whatever you're capable of receiving. And this radio can receive a lot, folks. In technical ways, in every technical way you can imagine, this radio was designed to be the best AM radio in the world, and it is. It's also FM, television, audio. Yes, you get TV, but just the audio, and it's kind of nice sometimes. NOAA weather alert that might even save your life if something nasty is coming your way. And tonight we have a special offer, the CC Plus, the one with all the new features, the CC radio, you know, plus the ability to switch to your favorite show at the appointed time with audio in and out jacks, an external AM antenna now, a jack back there so you can put an antenna on. Put up about, I tell you, 60 to 100 feet of wire out your window to a tree with a little insulator on the end before the tree now, and attach it to your radio, and you will hear the world. It is so awesome. That's a lot of fun. Simple wire antenna. Anyway, the CC radio right now comes with a special offer. When you buy it for the regular price, you get a collapsible camping lantern free of charge, worth $20 by itself. This is a very special one-time only ever in our lifetime deal. There's a thing about these lanterns. They're really neat. It looks like a gas lantern, but without all the heat noise of a gas lantern. It'll actually float if you want it to. So anyway, that is the big deal. One time only, until these lanterns are gone, and then poof, it's done. Number is 1-800-522-8863. 1-800-522-8863, or on the web at ccradio.com. Better take a look at that picture. My website is artbell.com, and then if I can bring mine up, let's see, under what's new, oh yes, here it is. First item, hard to miss, melting Antarctic polar cap. You can read the entire story, and you can see the rather worrisome photograph. There, my friend, is where the observable effects begin, but they don't end there. If this is, again, I'll say, the beginning of a rapid climate change, as scientists are now beginning to warn, interestingly, the cities that we now know, you know, on the east and west coast, you know, a lot of them, Florida, think of New Orleans, get that kind of sea level rise, and their history. A Saudi officials warned Thursday they would not allow, get this, U.S. servicewomen to go around without a head-to-toe robe, and criticized Washington for lifting the requirement that its female troops wear the garment. Now, this could be a serious point of contention with the Saudis, and I must tell you, it is my firm belief the Saudis don't want our butts there at all. They really don't want us there. They've made it clear. We've covered up a lot of the negative Saudi reaction that has been going around the world. You've got to listen to the other world press to know how serious it is. Saudis really don't want us there. Yes, they want to sell their oil. No doubt about that. But Saudis really don't want us there, perhaps even in a violent way. So anyway, they're saying that our women have to put on the appropriate garb or else. Remember the other night we had a story about birds, zillions of birds dying at once? Well, here it is. Birds usually perch on power lines without harming a thing. But in Montgomery County yesterday, the typical bird behavior sent smoke curling from appliances and computer screens and left hundreds of homes without electricity for hours. In other words, it really got zapped. The whole area got zapped in people's computers. Can you imagine sitting in front of your computer and all of a sudden the room gets very bright and you hear a soft sizzling sound from your computer? accompanied by the acrid smell of burning wires. Wouldn't be a good day, right? Anyway, it seems as though a whole lot of birds all at once sat on a power line at about 4 p.m. And so many birds sat on the power line that the power line above sagged into the power line below. And when that happened, everything went totally berserk. That would be a dead short. Well, of course, the birds immediately became cooked birds, totally cooked, blackened. And everybody's power went kaboom, a gigantic spike, and yes, indeed, appliances went down, but there was nothing paranormal about it. It was simply the weight of the birds that did that weird, huh? Well, here's a good one. Here's a great one. A scientist in Scotland hopes to create the edge of a black hole on his desk. He believes that he can freeze light and then see what happens at the rim of the phenomena. If he succeeds in creating an event horizon, he expects to simulate Hawking radiation, which is believed to be the only particle capable of escaping a black hole. Nature reports that the physicist there, whose name I will not try to pronounce, from the University of St. Andrews, will use a device the size of a tabletop to carry out the experiment. Hawking radiation is made up of hidden electromagnetic waves thought to occur when light reaches the event horizon. As the light waves hit it, they're thought to split into two pairs of particles, or into pairs of particles. One falls into the black hole, and the other escapes as Hawking radiation. Do you get the picture? So they know they've created this black hole because of the Hawking radiation. He plans to simulate the event horizon using materials recently proved to halt light. The results will be a naked horizon, he says, that's in quotes, similar to an event but without the black hole. And so, you know, this is one of those stories that I was telling you about. Now, if not this man, then somebody else soon is going to push a button on something they are, or we are going to be very sorry about, or maybe won't even have an instant of time to be sorry about it. There probably is something that could tap virtually the power of creation. Maybe it's what everybody calls zero point. Who knows? But as they begin to tamper around with the things of creation, like black holes, and then I tell you, anything could happen. And if Dr. Kaku, Michio Kaku, were here right now, he would also say that. He would say, yes, oh yes, you know, some caution in this area would be advised. Because there is the, some believe, slim possibility. Others would say a probability, inevitable probability, some would say, I'm sure, that it's going to occur, that somebody is going to push a button on an experiment like this, and they are going to, well, who knows? Maybe it would be like hitting the reset button on your computer. You know, everything dies. Everything goes to zero. Electrons stop flowing. Your computer goes off. And it starts all over again. Now, it eventually gets booted back up, right? That could happen to the world. When you think about it, if the wrong button is pushed and the wrong creative energies are set loose, let's think of it that way, then there could be a creation. Of course, all that would be here would be lost, but there would be a creation of something. It's just that it might not serve our purposes to be uncreated in the process. So scientists are, you know, they're dancing on the edge right now, and they're on a really big pressure. precipice. And one of these days, one of them is going to push one of these buttons and, you know, inevitably there's going to be a spill. So I watch these stories very carefully. There is a small rural town somewhat northeast of the city of Niagara Falls, New York. One evening, a resident of that town called the local volunteer fire department to request some assistance in removing their cat from a tree. Since this was a questionable call, the fire control dispatcher called the fire chief at home, asked if he wanted to respond. Chief said, sure, call out the department. Since it was early evening, shouldn't be a problem for the volunteers to respond. Fire department responded with a rescue truck, which had an extension ladder. The tree, however, was too tall and too willowy to support the weight of the extension ladder. Rather than send men back to the fire hall to bring the aerial ladder truck, one of the firefighters suggested an alternate course of action. Two of the firefighters supported the ladder while a third climbed high enough to tie a rope around the tree at about half its height. The other end of the rope tied to a trailer hitch on a pickup truck, with the truck slowly driven forward, forcing the tree to bend over with the cat in it. Firefighter was posted to grab the cat as soon as it was within his reach when they pulled it far enough down, right? Well, here's where you push the button and things go wrong. The knot securing the rope on the trailer hitch slipped free. Now, the cat in question was last seen airborne, heading south toward the city of Niagara Falls. And actually, this cat was never seen again, ever. The incident couldn't, I guess, avoid using the word catapult. And so in description of the incident, they, I'm telling you, did use the word catapult. That cat, it may be still going. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell, and in a moment, we go to open lines for a segment. Stay right where you are.
Of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. And the wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
I'll tell you to me, when you listen to those words there, the Doors are singing in time. They're singing about Osama bin Laden, if you listen to the words. Somebody asked me today if I thought Osama's going to be caught, and I don't know. The answer is I don't know. You know, I'm told some say he's sick. You know, he has some kind of disease, and
If he can't get treatment, he's dead probably already. But if they don't find him, he is going to take on a very mythic-like quality. And for an entire generation and more, we're all going to have to listen to various theories of where Osama bin Laden is, what dastardly deed he's planning. I mean, you can see ahead easily, right? That's coming. If they don't get him, he'll be not at all forgotten. In fact, like the Nazis, you'll hear stories about Osama bin Laden until you die and until your children die and probably for generations thereafter. You like the Mothman prophecies, which I know nothing about. All right, anyway, open lines coming up directly.
Service first.
Well, you've got to say advertising really works. You know, they've really been promoting Rose Red. We've got an ad running here all the time now. Rose Red, Rose Red. It's on the front of TV Guide. And I've got to say it works. I now have made up my mind. I have to see Rose Red. Stephen King's big blowout scary thing on TV. I'm going to see it for sure. So there you are. Advertising works. Even sitting here listening to my own ads, it works. It finally made me want to see this. I saw it on TV Guide, and I thought, finally, oh, you know, this does sound weird. So I guess I'll watch Rose Red. And I almost even believe the IRS loves me. I don't know if I'm there yet. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello?
Hello.
Art, I was listening to Mark Hazelwood the other night about the 10th planet.
The 10th planet, yes.
And it was... one of the probably the scariest of all your scary programs.
Huh. Well, it was pretty scary. And if you combine it with what I found and put up on the web, you know, from ABC about the planet or sun that might be out there, yeah, it was pretty scary. Sure.
But maybe today was a day of prayer for peace, and maybe if people pray, God will divert it.
Go away, big planet, go away.
But anyway... also, if one more question.
Yes.
When you had Dr. Jacobs on, Dr. Mm-hmm. David Jacobs on the last time.
Yes.
I missed that program.
Well, you missed a lot.
I was very disappointed.
Yes. Well, you should be disappointed. It was a really good show.
Yeah, I heard him a few years ago when he was on before that. But
he happens to be one of the people that makes sense to me in this world. I don't think they're warm and fuzzy, and I lean toward Dr. Jacobs' view myself, sir.
Yeah. Now, did he say what planet they're from, or are they here on Earth, or what?
Well, like everybody, you know, they I think he believes there are varying sorts here. And I think I probably believe that myself, too. If they're here, they're varying sorts. I just, you know, his central theme, which is actually a very much a minority theme, is that, you know, they're not friendly. And I generally agree with that. If you look at what they do, not what people say so much when they get back from these encounters, but what they do to these people, from my point of view, that's not friendly. Anyway, on the international line, you are on the air. Where are you, please?
Yes, good morning, Mr. Bell. I'm calling from Oslo, Norway.
Oslo, Norway. All right, glad to have you. And your first name?
Oh, yes, it's George, yes.
George. Okay,
yeah.
George.
I was really interested when you mentioned the clip about Antarctica, possible changes that we're going to maybe see with regards to the Gulf Stream could
I know.
Set us into a little bit of a deep freeze up here.
Listen, your freeze, you're in Norway, right, Oslo?
That's
so your freeze would just be intolerably deeper. That's the way I think of it. Now people in England and France and some of those countries, they're going to have a rude shock. I mean, you all know, in Oslo, you're fairly used to a good cold winter. You know how to live it. In London, now imagine that in London.
Well, I think everything would pretty well go to complete stop in London if it got any colder than what we have now.
A rapid climate change could make cold places warm and warm places cold. It could do all kinds of really strange, violent things. Sea levels could suddenly rise. We could get a slippage of a continent of ice into the water, which would be truly bad news. A lot of interesting things can occur.
Well, I think you're absolutely right, and you never know. You may wind up with getting more rain where you're at than what you're getting now, and you may be in a semi-tropical paradise in a few years.
We don't call it the desert of the sea for nothing. The sea used to be here, and it could be here again. I know it.
If I could just make one quick statement.
Yes.
I am so looking forward to your guest with regards to the Mothman. I was just a youngster back in the 60s, and we were living in New Brunswick, and we had a UFO over where we lived. Unfortunately, I didn't see it, but the whole neighborhood did. And so the neighbors are coming over to my parents' place, you know, and we're talking, and I was, you know, listening intently. And soon after that is when I started to hear stories about the Mothman, and I get nightmares over that and have had nightmares ever since. So,
have you seen a picture of the Mothman?
Actually, I have. I remember, I think I was about 10 years old. I used to get all these...
Stop. What does it look like? I haven't seen a picture yet.
Oh, I see. Well, it was from one of these old grainy magazines that, you know, very...
That's fine. What did it look like?
Well, it it looked like... like one of those sort of a biblical type of serpent picture. Not serpent, but, you know, reptilian type of... If you remember, I think, one of the scenes in The Exorcist?
Yes.
Where they had the statue?
Yes.
Something along those lines is what I recall in terms
Wonderful.
Of...
Wonderful.
So you could appreciate my nightmares.
I can appreciate your nightmares. And John Keel is, I understand, the one guy to talk to about this. So I'm really honored to have him on.
Well, I've put everything aside. All my work is at halt while you're going to be interviewing this gentleman because I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, we'll see shortly. How's everything in Oslo?
Oh, it's pretty good. It's not too cold. It's about minus 10 centigrade, so it's a little bit less than zero Fahrenheit.
Right.
And we're just waiting for spring, which will be in about 4 months' time.
Well, have a good one, sir. Thank you very much. Good night. All the way from Oslo, Norway. I'll have to talk to him about why he really is there and what he's doing there. And I think I've heard from him before, and I'm trying to recall. He was either working for a corporation or teaching. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art. This is Don in Fort Worth.
Yes, sir.
And first off, I want to say I enjoy your show. I think it's one of the better, if not the best, evening and all-night talk shows that I listen to.
That's very kind.
And the reason I called, I would like to comment, backtrack real quick. You were talking about the Scotsman that's going to try to make or generate Hawking radiation.
By producing an event horizon on the corner of his desk.
Okay. Which reminded me of your anxiety about minuscule black holes and other things. And as far as the Scotsman go, I would like to tell you my opinion and why. If anything, all he's going to do is burn up his desk.
Well, that, I find that comforting. I just don't know that that it applies to these whole range of experiments like this and in this area. I'm not saying this guy is going to blow up the world, but it is within the range of possibilities of things that could happen when you do these kinds of things, sir.
Yes, it is, and I'm somewhat uncomfortable, but on the other hand,
yes,
I would like to tell you why I have the opinion that no great harm will come of any of this.
Why?
I'm a firm believer that there is one man who never told a lie, and he said he would come back and there will be people here when he does. And they wrote a whole book about that man, and the book's name is the Holy Bible.
Yes. I see. Well,
and that comforts
you. I understand it comforts you, and I would never in a million years try and talk you out of your faith. I mean, you don't do that. People have faith in things. That's it. They believe.
Yeah.
So that's fine. I'm glad it makes you comfortable. I wish I was comfortable. I'm not.
Well, I'm not comfortable. A lot of bad things can happen from this besides destroying the entire world. Don't get me wrong.
But I mean, that's good for starters, the entire world.
Yeah, but I don't think it'll be that bad. Can I comment on Mothman real quick before I ring off?
Yes.
Quite some time back, maybe the man you're interviewing wrote the book. I read a book called The Mothman Prophecies, or The Mothman, whatever it was. And it was about a little town up there in the east somewhere.
Okay, well, then you read this man's book.
Yes.
The book is called The Mothman Prophecies.
Okay, and there was an illustration on the front, and it showed this gray, shadowy, almost not quite human figure with wings folded around it. And you couldn't really make out a whole lot of details except for one thing, and that was its eyes. They were red, and they were as big as silver dollars, the old-timey silver dollars.
I hate red eyes.
Yeah, and that's what it had.
I hate red eyes. All right, listen, I've got to run. Thank you very much for the description. No, red eyes, I've never... You know, certain things give people the jeebies. Certain things don't bother other people. It happens that red eyes are my thing. Snakes, I don't mind. Spiders, I'm not afraid of. Red eyes, and I'm gone. That's it. Red eyes, I don't like. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi there.
Hello.
Hi, this is Lauren Coleman.
Lauren Coleman?
Yes, in Maine.
The Lauren Coleman?
The Lauren Coleman.
Hey.
A good friend of John Keel's, and I want to congratulate you for having him on.
Oh.
This is great. I just wrote a book to honor him called Mothman and Other Curious Encounters, all about the Mothman.
Do you have any good pictures of Mothman?
Yes. If you actually go to the front of my website, www.laurencoleman, L-O-R-E-N, Coleman.com.
Okay.
You'll see the cover of my book. And actually, I was just in Point Pleasant, West Virginia, where this happened about 3 weeks ago, talking, re-interviewing the witnesses again and talking to people. They looked at the cover of my book, and they actually said, this is the best representation of what they actually saw. A 7-foot-tall creature, no head, gigantic wings, huge red eyes. In fact, so red and so scary that sometimes that's all the people saw. John will tell you about that. But it's just
God.
An amazing story.
Well, then I'm not going to like this. For some reason, Lauren, and I don't know what that is, I've gone all the years of my life only hearing references to the Mothman prophecies and never really knowing a doggone thing about the Mothman.
Well, it is interesting that here we have a case that's waited 35 years to really come out in the open. You know, John did a great job with his 1975 book, and finally Hollywood's discovering it. But, you know, 2002 is definitely going to be the year of the Mothman.
You think so?
Oh, yeah.
You think the Mothman is going to be like the new Chupacabra?
Well, I think so. I think what's happening is cryptozoologists, paranormalists, ufologists who have really ignored John's work are all of a sudden going to have to sit up and look at what's going on. You had a 13-month period of an incredible vortex of phenomena. UFOs, men in black, poltergeist activity.
Do you think that Mothman is paranormal to the degree that it might be coming through one of these holes?
I definitely think that John's concept of window areas is something we have to not ignore.
That's what he believes. You see, I don't know anything about any of this. So he does believe that there are kind of windows then.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he invented the whole concept of window areas. And, I think that's something that we have to look at. There's almost as if sometimes the window opens very widely and a lot of different phenomena comes through. And sometimes it's very narrow and you just have UFO flaps. But, my whole chapter 9 in my book is called Windows in honor of John's whole concept there.
Are you two friends?
Oh, yeah, we're great friends. I just talked to him today and, went to his birthday party a few years ago. Yeah,
no
John and I are great. We've been great friends since the 60s.
Well, it's my understanding he's a young 80 years old. Is that right?
No, he's only 72. He's just a very, very young man.
72. All right. Mm-hmm. And he began writing about all of this how long ago, Lauren?
When he was just in his 20s, he started doing radio shows on UFOs. And he was a screenwriter and a TV writer, and then slowly over the years started writing for some of the men's magazines, which were pretty serious in the old days when the True Magazine and different things like that were the only places that you could really talk about Fortean and UFO phenomena. And John did quite a bit of that. And then he came into some advances here and there to do some wonderful kind of books like UFOs, Trojan Horse, or...
Well, you know, Lauren, this description really sounds to me like, you know, what a lot of people would call an evil entity.
Yeah, well, I think that John certainly, as the lightning rod for Mothman, has been able to really define Mothman and some of the strange phone calls and entities and all of the things that he'll tell you about tonight as it's really...
I guess I'm asking your opinion. You know, there are a lot of religious folks out there,
yeah,
and they're going to think
yeah.
this is a demon. It sounds like a classic demon.
It's funny. You can look at it as a demon. I've interviewed witnesses because if you look at Mothman beyond the context of Point Pleasant, people have seen winged creatures all over the world and all over the United States. Some people describe these as angels. So you can look at it in two different perspectives. Some young kids that I've interviewed that seen these things without any heads and with wings have talked about angels. Other people who are chased in the middle of the night by a huge red-eyed creature have a much more sinister feeling.
My problem with this is that angels, the way I think of angels, they definitely don't have red eyes. Angels couldn't have red eyes.
Well,
I don't think they could.
No, I understand what you're saying. So generally, most of the people who talk about Mothman give it a very sinister feeling. Yes.
Has Mothman ever been known to physically assault humans in any way?
Mothman itself, no. But people have. There's a linkage, of course, between Mothman and the collapse of the Silver Bridge at the end of the 13 months, and that's a whole different story. But physically, Mothman never touched any of these witnesses, never, scraped against them, never did any of that.
Did any of these witnesses ever die of heart attacks?
Not as far as I know.
Of course, then I guess they wouldn't be witnesses.
Right.
They'd just be dead.
In 1977 in Illinois, of course, you have the classic case of... in Lawndale, Illinois, of young man Marlo Lowe, who was picked up by one of these things and carried for 10 feet. But in Illinois, of course, they're called Thunderbirds, so it's just a special name of Mothman that's kept Mothman kind of in a different place.
Well, Mothman almost sounds like a comic book hero.
Well, it was named a copy editor in an Ohio newspaper. Decided that he loved the series on TV called Batman. And he came up with the name Mothman. The witnesses down there called it Big Bird or Bird or the
Big
Giant Bird.
Yeah, Big Bird, that's good. All right, well, listen, John A. Keel is coming
Great.
Up next. Lauren, thank you.
Nice talking to you.
Boy, am I glad you got through, my friend.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Good night. I hate red eyes. I really hate red eyes. Angels with red eyes? I don't think so.
Seasons don't fear the reaper, nor do the wind, the sun, or the rain. We can be like they are. Come on, baby, don't fear the reaper. Baby, take my hand. Don't fear the reaper. We'll be able to fly.
The World Trade Center burned for almost 3 months, a very, very long time, but not the longest burning fire in the U.S. Find out what blaze has burned a lot longer.
So I came into you, sweet lady, answering your mystical call. Crystal ball on the table.
The Kingdom of Nye. From west of the Rockies, dial 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may recharge at 1-775-727-1222 or use the wildcard line at 1-775-727-1295. To recharge on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Network.
I have no idea how all these years I have missed the Mothman. You know, people have called and referenced the Mothman on my program before, but I never knew a thing about it. Never, never, never. Certainly never the original story. Nothing about it at all. And here we have the world's expert on Mothman about to be on the air, John A. Keel, arguably the world's foremost researcher into the paranormal. All about Mothman coming right up.
room volume. Has a crank on the side. Turn it for 30 seconds. The radio plays for 35 minutes, guaranteed. Be gone, the power company. It just takes your hand cranking for 30 seconds. And then it's got a solar panel on top. It's got internal rechargeable batteries to store any excess energy you or the sun might produce. And it's got this extendable LED light that's got a magnetic clip on the back. So you get light and you get radio for 35 minutes every time you turn that crank. It should be in every single American household. Just $99.95 now. Get one before they're gone. I'm telling you. The number is 1-800-522-8863. 1-800-522-8863. They're on the web, of course, at ccradio.com. John A. Keel, arguably the world's foremost researcher into the paranormal, has traveled extensively to over 40 countries, investigating the unknown for almost 50 years. His voracious curiosity manifested early. He read everything, particularly science, travel, humor, and magic. When 12, he had one of his first brushes with the paranormal, an attic poltergeist that responded to his knocking. Huh? We'll ask about that. By the time he was 14, he was renting space, writing a column for the Perry Herald, publishing the school paper, and contributing to magazines. Oh, my. At 16, he was publishing a science fiction magazine. A fanzine, actually. The Lunarite, I believe it is. And sold a piece to the New Yorker. Wow. In the 1950s, he worked for the Department of the Army as Chief of Continuity and Production for the American Forces Network, AFN in Frankfurt. That's Germany. In 1952, wrote and produced the radio program Things in the Sky about unidentified flying objects that was heard by millions throughout Europe. Author now of 30 books since Jadu, I guess, his 1957 autobiography. Keel's groundbreaking books have been published in over 20 countries and include many of ufology's most acclaimed titles, Operation Trojan Horse, Our Haunted Planet, and The Mothman Prophecies. His incredible Mothman investigations are the subject of a major motion picture starring a Keel-inspired character played by Richard Gere, all slated to be released on January 25th. That, in most time zones, would be today. Keel has written articles that have appeared in many leading periodicals, including Playboy, Saga, Fate. His monthly Beyond the Known column is a popular Fate feature. John was recently the subject of Secrets of the Shadow World. Oh, my, what a title. A feature-length documentary acclaimed by acclaimed director George Cukor, who premiered at Lincoln Center in New York City. His extensive television appearances include Johnny Carson, Jack Parr, Hugh Downs, David Letterman. Wow. This guy's been around. John, hi. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, I've been up to no good for many, many years here.
And how have we never before this moment connected?
I don't know. I've listened to you for a very long time. Somehow, it's never happened before.
It's just illogical. I
know many of the people who have been on your show. And it's illogical that we haven't connected before.
Lauren Coleman called, got through, actually, just before you were to come on the air here. That wasn't a planned thing. He just got through. And I admitted to him, and I'm going to admit the same thing to you. All of these years that I've done the paranormal and things about the paranormal, I've traveled a lot of different paths, but the only thing I've known about Mothman was an occasional caller who would reference Mothman. And I'd always say, well, I don't know a lot about it. And your name would come up. And so anyway, here we are finally. What is Mothman?
Well, it all began about 35 years ago. So that's, in terms of generations, that's like three generations, and by modern standards, you know. easy to forget it. Mothman appeared in West Virginia in 1966, and there were frequent appearances of this creature, which was described as being about 7 or 8 feet tall,
uh-huh.
which is pretty big.
Oh, yes.
And had very bright red eyes.
Bad.
And it would spread wings that were about 10 feet across, and it would take off straight up in the air. And it had a curious habit of chasing automobiles.
Straight up in the air. Now it didn't...
Like a helicopter. Right. It didn't. You know, most of birds have to do a running start.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Superman leap.
Yeah. And anyone who saw this was usually horrified and terrified and traumatized by it. And I, over a period of that year, I collected over 100 reports from people who seemed very sincere and very, very frightened by what had happened to them. This thing had sort of hypnotic powers that people would be transfixed when they saw it. And then the year climaxed with the collapse of a bridge with a lot of people on it.
What did that have to do with Mothman?
Well, it seemed to bring things to not to a stop, but everything slowed down. There were a lot of people on the bridge who had either encountered the Mothman or had close relatives who had encountered the Mothman.
This was geographically held to how small an area?
To the it's the Ohio Valley. The Ohio River, you know, is the border between Ohio and West Virginia.
Right.
And a little town called Point Pleasant was right there where the bridge was. And it was a town of about 6,000 people.
And so the sightings were confined to this town or to an area around the town or what?
To a large part of West Virginia.
Oh.
And there were sightings in Ohio, too. And there were curious sightings of what really looked like a really large bird, like, say, an ancient pterodactyl or something. So, meanwhile, the people in this town and all around it were having all kinds of paranormal manifestations, poltergeist activity. And that... I happened to be there almost by accident, and I had gone to Beckley, West Virginia, which is sort of a mining town then. I don't know what it is now.
What had taken you there? Why were you going?
Because there was a boy there who had found a cat with wings.
Cat with wings.
Yes, and this cat was named. He named it Thomas, and it became a celebrity. And he charged 10 cents to look at this cat. So all of the people in the area were paying 10 cents to take a look at this winged cat.
Well, I'd sure pay 10 cents.
Yeah. Well, I went there. I did a story for a magazine. I think it was a magazine called Coronet. You probably don't remember that.
I do remember that.
There were many general magazines at that time. Now there are very few general magazines. They're all specialized. But... I was a freelance writer writing for all of these magazines, and I went there to track down the whole story on Thomas the winged cat, and his wings fell off.
They fell off?
Yeah. They were like lumps of gristle or something.
So they were...
and that ruined the kid's business.
Yeah, I'm sure that was the end of the 10 cents.
There was a lot more to the story. A woman in the neighborhood claimed that Thomas was her cat, and then when the wings fell off, she lost interest in it. She took the boy to court before the wings fell off.
The court case died on the vine as soon as
so there, there was quite a story there. And while I was in Beckley, I was having lunch with the editor of the newspaper in Beckley,
right.
And the story came over the wire that four young people had seen this... tall winged creature in Point Pleasant, outside of Point Pleasant, in an area that was known as the TNT area.
Before we even get any farther, can I ask you, how does one get a job doing what you did, chasing, I mean, being able to say, listen, editor, I'm on a plane for this winged cat. How do you get a job where you get to do those kind of stories?
I collected many other stories on each of these trips. And Playboy magazine had asked me to get to the bottom of the flying saucer mystery. At that time, there were flying saucer stories from all over the world, not just from Michigan or, you know, localized stories. People were seeing them everywhere, and they were seeing them in the Ohio Valley.
Well, gee whiz, John, they're still seeing them in the Ohio Valley.
Yes.
And we still don't know what they are, so I take it you disappointed Mr. Hefner and couldn't get to the bottom of it.
I did not succeed in solving the mystery. But I traveled extensively around the United States, and I saw many of these things myself.
Well, I'm sorry the cat's wings fell off. That would have been very cool to have a winged cat.
Yeah. Well, it was an interesting story, and it's in one of my books. Right now, offhand, I couldn't tell you which book. But anyway, I went to Point Pleasant expecting to stay there for a few hours.
Sure.
Interviewing these people.
Sure.
And I discovered that there were all sorts of things happening there. They were seeing UFOs. When I say UFOs, these were very, very bright lights.
Okay.
And they were going up and down the river, and everybody was seeing them. And nobody knew what they were. And very often they would be very, very low in the sky. They'd be like 100 feet above the water.
And in size, how big?
Well, they were mostly the size of a large beach ball. And extremely bright, and they would change colors sometimes. Just what we're hearing today, you know, the same kind of thing.
Well, you know, today, though, there's some recent really interesting scientific literature about plasma balls. Now, these plasma balls apparently defy conventional physics in that they are able to maintain the energy that generates them and, in fact, even increase it while standing in the atmosphere. And So that's all I know, but I know that science has determined that, and they don't understand how it can be.
Well, they were talking about that in the 60s, the plasma balls.
Really?
And, you know, you could say nothing is new, that everything that people are seeing today, they were seeing...
Has always been around?
Yes, and as you know, the history of this goes way back.
But actually being able to measure one, that is new. And being able to see it defy conventional physics, nothing after creation continues to get stronger. It gets weaker after
right.
the instant of creation, whatever would make this plasma ball. So it defies physics. That part's new.
Well, these things seem to have a basic intelligence to them. If you flashed a flashlight at them, they jump out of the way of the beam.
I've heard those stories, yes.
And also I would flash, say, three times, and they would flash back three times.
Oh.
And I did this in front of witnesses who signed affidavits to that effect. And I was totally baffled by this because there were so many of them, and night after night we would see them. And I was also, of course, I was hoping to catch the bird, as the people called it.
Yes.
And
what did you think these, obviously you had to have done a lot of speculation about what these apparent intelligent balls of light were?
Well, they had to be some form of energy, because people who got close to them would suffer very severe burns on their body.
Mm-hmm.
Often the eyes would be the first to be affected. It was like conjunctivitis, and that happened to me once. It was like getting sand in your eyes, and it lasted for several days.
Oh, my.
And then there were three cases during that period, not in West Virginia, but elsewhere, of people who were permanently blinded by looking at these things.
Do you believe that it was just the brightness of the object? You know, they tell you all the time, don't look at the sun. You could lose your sight. Or
right.
do you think it was some form of radiation or what?
Well, during that period, you know, between 1964 and 1968, we had this enormous UFO wave all over the world. And a lot of people were suffering various kinds of physical ailments after seeing these things.
Right.
Some of them would, it was like their insides were burned or something. Their urine turned black.
As though they were cooked.
Cooked, right.
Maybe even microwaved, huh?
That would be microwaves, yes. And animals were very afraid of these things. Most dogs and cows and horses and things would act as terrified by them.
Well, they've got developed instincts.
They probably heard sounds, too, that we couldn't hear.
Right. Right. They would instinctually, the way animals understand fire instinctually, they would understand this, I would think.
Yes.
Anything with that kind of energy, sure.
So,
We're not that bright, probably. We go, duh, what's that? Wow.
Well, when you consider the universe, we're sort of like ants. We can construct things and do things and destroy our environment, but I don't think we're very important in the universal scheme of things.
Or at least not as important as we think we are.
Yes. Well, that's another problem. Man's ego is always getting in our way. But these sightings, I saw so many of them and signaled to them, and other people were with me when I was seeing these things, and it was a very interesting period of history, which is now almost completely forgotten. Because there are new generations coming up who think it's new to them. And they see these things and think it's all brand new.
By the way, I want to settle something. My producers said they thought you were 80 years old.
I'm 72.
You're 72. So Lauren Coleman said you were 72, and he's exactly right then. You're 72. Yeah, I mean, America can barely remember what happened 2 weeks ago about a lot of things. And so remembering what happened that long ago, no way. But there's no doubt about it. You were there. It happened.
Yes, and I was in many other places. It was happening on Long Island here in New York State.
Really?
And many sightings. And we could see them coming in from the ocean.
What?
It was like watching these would look like the tips of red-hot pokers. And they would come in from the ocean and fly over Long Island. And these were larger objects than the lights, and we don't know what they were, but they were obviously radiating infrared or something. And over the years, I've seen a number of those, and they occasionally also have a habit of chasing automobiles.
Do you think there's a relationship between those and the lights we talked about?
I think they're all interrelated. How, I don't know, but I sort of discarded the theory that they were from outer space because there's so many of them, and it goes back so far, the history goes back so far.
The one distinctive thing about Mothman seems to be the description of blood-red eyes, right?
Right, and that's a description also of Bigfoot very often.
Yeah. You know how some people hate snakes and some people are scared of spiders?
Right.
I'm scared of things with red eyes. I don't like red eyes. And somebody earlier was saying, well, you know, a lot of people have described things like Mothman as angels. And I said earlier, and I'll say again, angels definitely don't have red eyes. Not in my world, anyway. Hold on. Stay right exactly where you are, John. We'll take a break and be right back. I'm Art Bell.
I've been drifting on the sea of heartbreak, trying to get myself ashore for so long. For so long. Listening to the strangest stories, wondering where it all.
You are on the air on the international line. Where are you calling from, please?
I'm from Scotland.
You are the first caller from Scotland. Where are you, please?
I'm in Madrid, Spain.
In Madrid, Spain? On the internet.
Kingdom of Nye, from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. And the wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
You know, like angels don't play this harp. Angels don't have red eyes. Anyway, we're going to talk more about the Mothman prophecies in a moment. That's a question in itself. I wonder why they derived the word prophecies. That implies that something was told about something that would happen, something prophetic. John A. Keel will be right back.
Century ago, an unspeakable evil was born.
Some houses are born bad. Houses like Rose Red.
Now one team's dream to uncover the truth.
Rose Red is a dangerous place to run psychic experiments.
Will become their worst nightmare. Stephen King's Rose Red.
I'm a creep.
The terror begins Sunday at 9, 8 central on ABC.
Well, it certainly cannot be a coincidence, because I don't believe in coincidences like this, that John Keel is on the program tonight, and the movie just happens to be being released today. It's not a coincidence,
right? Isn't that astounding?
Right? Yeah, astounding. Now, they've probably been running you around doing interviews all over the place, haven't they?
Yes, they have.
Sucking your blood dry, right? Right, yes, up until the release date.
I've been interviewed by newspapers from all over the country, and done a number of TV shows. And
newspapers are not as much fun. They somehow they always get stuff wrong.
That's guaranteed.
I mean, it absolutely is guaranteed. At least when you're on radio, these are your words, you know. They're not going to change.
Right.
The Mothman prophecies, why the word prophecies?
Because I started, when I was chasing these things, I started getting a lot of mysterious phone calls.
Oh.
And this was, you know, today we have satellites up there that can interfere with any telephone on Earth.
Right.
And in those days, we didn't have those satellites, so I couldn't really blame the government for this. These phone calls were usually very mechanical voices, like you get today from a computer, but we didn't have real PCs in those days either.
Right.
And they predicted a number of things that came true right on the nose.
Like what?
Martin Luther King.
His assassination?
Yes. They told me that he would be shot in the throat. And I took it so seriously, I spent some desperate days trying to contact his group. And I failed. Later I learned that many other people had also gotten this prediction one way or another and had tried to contact him.
Wow.
I think that, as you know, his last speech was, "I've been to the mountaintop." And it was almost a farewell speech.
Right.
He must have been aware of all this. There were predictions that the Pope was going to be assassinated. And there was an incident where a man dressed as a priest attacked the Pope with a black knife. And fortunately, the Pope's guards subdued this man. But it was a real attempt. There were a lot of predictions, which are, of course, in some of my books outlined in full.
Was this coming, John, at Point Pleasant or following or what?
This would usually be when I was back in my New York apartment that I'd get these crazy phone calls.
Do you think that it had something to do with Point Pleasant?
It was all interconnected because I was going back and forth to Point Pleasant frequently. And now that's almost 1,000 miles from New York. But as soon as I would get back from Point Pleasant, I'd have a string of messages of frantic things were happening again in Point Pleasant. So I'd have to jump in my car and go back.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the predictions that sort of built up over a period of time was that there was going to be a terrible accident on the river, the Ohio River, and that a lot of people were going to be killed. And because the other predictions had come true, I was getting rather frantic about this because I didn't know precisely what was going to happen. There were chemical factories along the river, and I was afraid that one of them was going to blow up. And, I couldn't tell the people there. If it didn't happen, I'd look like a fool. And if it did happen, you know, it's even worse.
You'd be implicated or something.
Well, I would have started a lot of rumors. That's what would have happened. And
Now, if you successfully predicted a chemical plant blowing up, believe me, you'd be a suspect.
Oh, yeah, because the FBI and the CIA were around there. At that time, I found out later a lot more than I should have known. The TNT area.
Oh, now that's interesting. So in other words, our own government, our spook side government, knew something was going on there as well and wanted to know what it was?
Because there were suddenly a lot of strangers, and as you know, especially in the 60s, the FBI dressed almost in a uniform. They had very short hair. They always wore a hat, and they dressed with neckties and you know, things that you didn't see in Point Pleasant very often. And
so an FBI agent would tend to stick out like a sore thumb.
Right. Uh-huh. That was their problem all over the country. Now I think they grow beards and they dress in shabby clothes and so on. But in those days they had to follow that dress code.
Well, I'll tell you something, John. The FBI guys that I've seen still look FBI all the way. I've had a few visit, and they're really classic guys.
Yeah. Yeah, it's almost like a machine turns them out somewhere.
Yeah, I guess, well, it does sort of. I guess that, as you point out, though, they've got a lot of undercover people and so forth now, these days. But, yeah, you're right. In those days, they would have just about all looked that way. And so, you know, they'd be recognizable in Point Pleasant. So you think our government had a big interest in whatever was happening there?
Well, there was a lady who lived near the bridge, and she claimed that she saw 2 days before the disaster, she saw two men wearing low-cut shoes, you know, Oxfords,
yes,
well-shined, and plaid jackets climbing around the bridge. Now, she'd never seen anybody except workmen climbing on that bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys, she couldn't identify them, but they weren't wearing FBI black jackets and so on.
Right. So the obvious suspicion is they did something that might have weakened the bridge or, I don't know, in some way affected it.
You could really speculate on that, and it didn't make any sense to her at the time. This is an area where men wore boots all the time, and it was wintertime, and a lot of slush and snow, and it was not proper dress to be climbing around a bridge.
Right. What would be, if you were to speculate, what would be the motive for doing that? Why bring the bridge down? What do you affect when you do that? What's the idea?
Well, there's another thing that happened when the bridge fell. There was a stoplight at either end of the bridge,
right,
and they were stuck on red. So the traffic on the bridge was not moving. It was cluttered with traffic. And these stoplights were not working. So
in other words, the entire bridge was covered with traffic?
Yeah, well, Christmas traffic. It was December 15th.
Right.
And it was the rush hour. And in those days, they had a rush hour. I don't think they have one anymore. But there were a lot of things that just didn't make sense. This kind of bridge normally wouldn't fall into the water. It was
right.
So that was just one part of the whole story.
Were many killed?
Yes, about 47 people.
47 people.
It made headlines all over the world.
Why do you think? Well, of course, it was prophesied. So.
They didn't say the bridge was going to collapse.
But a tragedy.
Every time I went to Point Pleasant, I carried a gas mask with me.
Why?
I was thinking of chemical factories.
Oh, I see.
And. Of course, I didn't want to start any kind of rumors or panics or anything, so I kept my mouth shut, except I wrote to a few people. I wrote to, at that time I was corresponding with Dr. Jacques Vallée.
Oh, yes, of course.
And he mentions it in one of his books, that I had sent him a letter predicting that something was going to happen on the river, the Ohio River. And
so,
he probably thought I was nuts.
So, Mothman, then, might have been, by imparting prophecies with his presence, or its presence, whatever it was or is, it might have been trying to warn people that danger, disaster, something horrible was about to happen?
Yes. And people in Point Pleasant started having very strange dreams. Mary Heyer, who was a newspaper reporter, dreamt that there were Christmas packages floating on the river. And the dream really disturbed her, but she couldn't interpret it. And other people were getting the same kind of dreams, that something terrible was going to happen in the town. And I was caught in the middle of all of this, and there was nothing I could do, really.
John, wouldn't there be another way of looking at it, though? That was a half-full glass of water. The half-empty is that Mothman caused this.
Well, he either caused it or he was trying to convey information to us in a strange way. And You know, I've given a lot of thought over the years. My book covers that whole period in detail because I kept careful notes, and I knew that there was something bizarre going on, and I didn't know what it was.
John, I've got to tell you about something. Earlier tonight, and I'm going to have Keith put this up for me on my website as soon as we can do it. There was a picture of a street just about where the 9/11 disaster occurred. Somebody who took a photograph, John. Maybe you've even seen it. Maybe somebody sent it to you. I don't know. Of this bird just having passed, it looks like a building, and it looks like a gigantic pterodactyl. It's the daggondest picture I've ever seen, John. Have you seen?
I haven't seen that.
You haven't seen that?
No.
Do you have a computer?
I have, but my electronics are not working very well here.
Okay. Well, Keith, if you have that photo and you can get it up, would you please put it up? I've been puzzling about this since I saw this photograph.
This was before the buildings went down?
Actually, it was just after. You can see the dust rising and stuff. And here's this giant... You know, people have said, well, the bird is closer to the camera than you think, but it doesn't look that way to me. It looks like a prehistoric, gigantic bird, and I think it's a real photograph, and I wish I had a computer so I could let you look at it. But it's got a prehistoric look to it. There's absolutely no question about it in my mind. And I wonder, I wonder.
Well, we all wonder. Is there anything close to it that you can compare the sizes with? Or?
Well, if let's put it this way. If this creature is where it looks to be with respect to the building, it would have to be like 100 feet long, or it's hard to even estimate. I don't know. You know what a true prehistoric bird looks like. Birds are still kind of prehistoric. The ones we have out here in the desert, when you look at them, they look prehistoric, John.
Yeah.
Birds are very old. You know, they're the relatives to the dinosaurs.
Right. Well, that's very strange. You know, in 1975, a group of school teachers were driving in Texas, and they saw what they thought was pterodactyl. They really thought it was a pterodactyl.
Right.
And this was investigated by Jerry Clark. I think you probably know him. There are no pterodactyls in Texas as far as we know.
I know there are people out investigating, actually going out into the field looking for pterodactyls now.
Are they?
Yes, there are. There are safaris down to South America and Central America looking for these things.
Hmm.
So a lot of people believe they're still around, and they might be.
Well, if they were, they would have to eat a lot, and we would find evidence of that. Of course, we do have the animal mutilations that have been going on for years. And
a lot of them going on right now in Montana, right now.
I think Linda is probably there.
Linda probably is there, and I know that other investigatory agencies that come on this program are also there. There's a lot of people investigating this right now, and I have no answer for them. Do you?
Well, you know, some years ago, a group of farmers in the western states held a class action suit against the government, claiming the government was doing this. And I think they won the case. There was a book published of the transcript of the trial and everything. It's called Atomic Holocaust. I can't remember the name of the author. He was a reputable newspaper man.
Really?
And this... You barely heard about this in the news media, but I did accidentally find a copy of the book, which I have buried here somewhere with my other books. But I remember reading it carefully, and they claimed, you know, the radiation collects around the anus of the animals,
uh-huh.
And they found that in a lot of these animals. And they apparently had a real case against the government with that.
The only problem I ever had with that was, well, you know, our government wouldn't have a hard time getting their hands on cows if they needed them.
Yeah, they should have their own ranch.
At the very least,
yeah.
Right? So why would they need various poor farmers' cattle? That part just never made sense to me.
Well, maybe it was some kind of an accident. And these animals were involved in a... You know, I don't know if you remember that far back. There was a case where a lot of sheep were killed.
I do. Oh, I do remember.
Dugway.
Yes, uh-huh.
And that was a government mistake.
It was, yes. It certainly was. And so, yes, if it happens once, I guess it can happen twice or three times. Yep. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, we have enough trouble with all these other things without chasing the government, chasing animals. It's everything is so weird and so interconnected in all this.
Well, a lot of people have speculated that they need animals that have been exposed in certain areas, you know, in specific areas. They have to take samples or something in certain areas. A lot of people think it may be speculated, it might be environmentally... some sort of environmental test that's going on because changes show up very quickly in cows, I guess.
Well, why wouldn't they come out in the open and go to the farmer and say, listen, we've got a problem. I'm going to look at your animals.
Well,
why do it in the middle of the night?
Well, because people like John Keel would write big stories about it.
Well, that's true.
and then we would find out we had a big environmental problem that they didn't really apparently want to discuss. So they might not go up to the farmer and say all that.
We know we have a big environmental problem on all levels, water and air and...
Well, we sort of know it. A lot of, but not enough of the right people know it. Tonight, in the first hour, John, I was showing a picture of the Antarctic. Where there ought to be ice, there's water.
Yes, it's melting, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And that's pretty scary.
Oh.
As you know, what will happen if the ice caps melt?
Nothing good.
And then we have the the problem of the superstorms and all that. The weather is really undergoing a strange change.
You've noticed.
Yeah, everybody has noticed. you have a book out on it, I think.
Okay, you know about that.
I read it.
You read it. John, yeah. Hold on. Stay right there. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Good morning.
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong.
You've known Dan Aykroyd since Saturday Night Live, the Blues Brothers, and the House of Blues, but did you know he's got a deep interest in UFOs? You can read about Dan in the February issue of the After Dark newsletter. You'll find out about his interest in the NASA UFO cover-up. And yes, there is evidence that UFO activity has been seen at NASA. Also, read about the future of nanotechnology, real-life stories of levitation.
I've been waiting for this moment for all my life.
Richard Bell in the Kingdom of Nye. From west of the Rockies, dial 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may Richard at 1-775-727-1222. Or use the wildcard line at 1-775-727-1295. To Richard on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Network.
And I think I'm about to knock your socks right off, folks. Listen to me closely. You heard John say pterodactyl earlier in connection with this disaster and with the Mothman. And I would like for you to go to my website immediately, artbell.com. Because the moment I heard that, I remembered this photograph that I got that that still staggers me. And if you'll just go to What's New, it will take you to the appropriate place. It says bird image from 9/11 photos, ? And just scroll down. And below John A. Keel's name, the last link says bird image in 9/11 pictures. Now, you take a good look at this for me. And I don't care if you're one of those people who says, well, look, the bird was close to the camera. Fine. I don't think so. It doesn't look that way to me at all. Looks to me like this bird was way back by the building where the photo was snapped. In fact, the enlargement, no matter what you think about how close or far away this bird was from the camera, looks like a pterodactyl to me. It looks exactly like one. So if you want a little eerie deja vu from hearing about the Mothman, go to my website right now, artbell.com. Go take a look at this, and you tell me. You tell me. It brought, the moment John said that, it brought this photograph to mind, and I had Keith bring it up. It's under What's New right now, bird image from 9/11 photos. Click on that, and then you tell me what you're seeing, regardless of how far away you think that bird is from the camera person. What kind of bird is that, folks? Coming back in just a moment is John A. Keel. We're talking about the Mothman prophecies. So if you want one, $99.95 this week only with a free phone patch cord. Call in the morning at 6:30 a.m. 1-800-522-8863. high-end electronics, the Secret & Company. 1-800-522-8863 on the web, of course, at ccradio.com. Now, volatile stock market, huh? We're in a recession. Officially, that is, in a recession. No question about it. When things are bad in the markets, things are good in gold. That's just a fact. Markets down 20, 25, 30%. Gold up almost 30%. Analysts are thinking gold is going to rise about another 20% or so this year. So if your portfolio is unbalanced and you, as a result of the current action in the market, are becoming unbalanced yourself, and I don't blame you, you might want to consider some diversification, and this company will get it done for you. They'll send you free of charge, free, good word, right? A first-rate audio seminar that'll show you exactly how to recession-proof what you've got left. The number to call is 1-800-474-4259. Market down, gold up. 1-800-474-4259. Seminar is entirely free. All you've got to do is mention my name. Do that. Well, John, I sure wish you had a handy computer, because we've sure got that photograph up here right now, and I think if you saw it, it would give you chills. So if you can make it to a computer in the next couple of days, after you probably slept for 2 or 3 days after doing all of these interviews, you'll eventually get to it. Go up and take a look.
Sounds fascinating. Now, these are real photographs with a real camera, not digital, or...
I don't know. It's either a digital camera or it's a regular camera scanned photograph. I don't know which, but it's a very clear photograph. Mm-hmm. Very clear. Now, there's the next question for you. I understand you have a theory about windows. You know, I was about to say, how did these things get here? But I was told that you've got a theory about windows, things that open temporarily, occasionally, in certain places, in certain conditions, certain windows that open to a different place, something like that?
It seems these paranormal manifestations cluster around certain areas century after century. And, for example, not far from Point Pleasant is Moundsville.
Moundsville.
And that's where all of the Indian mounds are, which are shaped like snakes and elephants.
Oh.
And you don't know about Indian mounds?
No, sir.
The Indian mounds are very interesting. We say they're Indian mounds, but they may have been done, you know, thousands of years ago by somebody else. And so this particular area of West Virginia has had a succession of mysterious events. Flatwoods, West Virginia, is not far from Point Pleasant, and they had a monster sighting there in 1952. And then a little further up the river is a town called Sistersville. And in 1896, the whole community was awakened by a very bright light, which came out of the sky. And they never had a logical answer for it, because if it had been a meteor, it would have hit somewhere and might have started fires and things, because it was that low and very bright. And I talked to one man, an elderly man there, who sort of remembered it, but he was a child at the time that it happened. And eventually the people there, I think, tried to say that it was some kind of astronomical phenomenon, but it was rare. And Sistersville is still a tiny little town there. But all up and down the Ohio Valley, we've had a long succession of these strange things.
What would you say was the most recent sighting you've heard of a Mothman?
Of Mothman?
Yes.
I think there was a young man in Pennsylvania who saw a giant bird just a few months ago. He was 19 years old, and he reported it to a local 14, a man named Stan Gordon, and that's how we heard about it. There was a sighting in South Dakota last summer. This giant bird was roosting on a tree for a long time because a lot of people saw it. And it was larger than anything they'd ever seen before. And then it flew away. But we do get these reports frequently. And Lauren Coleman tries to keep track of them more than I do.
I know he does, yes. I've had him on the show several times, and as I mentioned, he was on just before you were. That is a coincidence, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Anyway, this creature, so then this creature may well still be around and may visit the area where either horrendous events are going to occur or have occurred.
That's very possible if this is all related to psychic phenomena. And I think it is. I looked all over West Virginia for physical signs, like a bird that large has got to leave a spore and all kinds of traces, and it probably would need a large nest or a cave.
Not to mention gigantic eggs.
Gigantic eggs, right. And there was no trace of anything in that area. So and the bird also, the Mothman, had a habit of disappearing suddenly. People would see it, and then it would be gone. That's, of course, also true of these bright lights.
Yes. So that brings us right back to the paranormal and these areas that seem to, I don't know, for a time something opens. What do you think opens? What is it, John, that's opening?
Well, the scientists are working on all kinds of theories about other dimensions and all.
They sure are.
And they're getting closer all the time to some kind of spectacular explanation for the universe. They're just finally recognizing that most of the universe is made up of dark matter that doesn't reflect light. And the stars that we see are only a tiny portion of the real universe, whatever it is.
All of that is dead correct. That's exactly what they're saying. And, you know, it's going to really eventually turn everything upside down on its ear about what we believe and what can be true and what, you know, what was called science fiction and just legend and myth. It may all come from somewhere.
That's true. And, of course, first the scientists have to fight among themselves. You know, that's part of the process.
They're doing lots of that now.
They're doing lots of that.
Yeah. So maybe a lot of what you saw then, I mean, what were you thinking then? Then the scientists weren't saying things like they are now. Other dimensions were pure science fiction, you know, then. So.
Well, I was thinking a lot of things because I was totally baffled by all this. And it was very unsettling. Because I couldn't talk about it much with other people, certainly not with the people in West Virginia. Could not discuss these things. And I was aware that these things were always clustering around certain areas, generation after generation. And if somebody named Jones saw something in 1896... somebody named Jones would see it in 1910 in the same area, and so on. It seemed like it was almost hereditary. These things kept recurring. And, of course, the historical records were very vague. We had to depend on newspapers of the period, which were known for their hoaxes. And it was a difficult research job. Today, many of the newspapers in small towns have gone, and we're not getting any records at all.
That's right. Wouldn't it, being West Virginia, kind of in the Bible Belt there, wouldn't a lot of the people who saw these things probably regard them as evil entities of some sort?
Yes, there was a lot of that. We had a rash of Men in Black cases, which seemed evil. These men would arrive in black Cadillacs, and they looked... well, they had angular features and a very dusky skin, sort of like when I would carry pictures around with me of different racial groups, and they would always pick out Laplanders.
Laplanders.
That didn't make any sense at all, but that was what people thought these men looked like.
Oh, isn't that odd?
So then we had phantom photographers who would drive up and photograph somebody's house and ask to photograph the children. And this is going on in recent years in England, and they call them phantom social workers. But they're very interested in children.
That's
spooky.
That is really spooky. That's really spooky. Do you have any best guess about what they were?
I don't know, because I put out the word to all the police up and down the Ohio Valley to watch out for these guys, and sometimes I would miss them by 10 minutes, and they would disappear somewhere. Eventually, you know, this built up into the Men in Black lore, and they finally made a comedy out of it in the movies. There's another Men in Black movie coming up this year.
It's not all comedy, though, believe me.
No, I'm the first one to agree with that. Something is very strange going on out there. For example, I was talking to a woman on the phone one day that I had met in West Virginia.
Uh-huh.
And she said, by the way, as I told your secretary the other day, I said, hey, wait a minute. I don't have a secretary.
Right.
And this woman had been going to people that I had interviewed, and she was re-interviewing them and telling them that she was my secretary.
Really?
And they said it was an attractive blonde woman, I think, with blonde hair and carrying a clipboard and looking very secretarial.
Gee, John, somebody was really interested in your work?
Well, that
really
was,
interested.
That was part of the growing paranoia in that period, which, of course, I've given detail in my book and in the movie and all. But it was a very frightening period.
Why do you think they've decided to make this big motion picture? And, by the way, have you seen it yet?
Yes, I've seen it.
You have?
And I liked it.
And you liked it?
Yeah. They of course, couldn't do exactly what's in the book, but they did a lot of the things in the book, and they did it. They captured the mood of the book and the atmosphere and did a very good job with the production, honestly. And I think it's going to cause a sensation. For example, there was one thing I've told you, I had all these problems with the telephone.
Right.
And at one time, I got disgusted with the telephone, and I pulled the plug out of the wall.
Yes.
And the phone rang.
What?
Now, how can you explain that?
You cannot.
And
there's a separate device inside the telephone that has been there for quite a while.
Well, I was going around taking telephones apart. In those days, the phones, you could easily open them up.
Oh, yes.
Now, and with modern phones, you need special tools, I think, to do that. But that little incident is in the movie. And many of the other things that I encountered in those days are in the movie. And it's
pretty well represented then. Obviously, of course, Hollywood always takes liberties here or there and will change something here or there, but as a general rule, it follows pretty much what you wrote, or there's enough of what you wrote in the movie to make
it happen? Yeah, enough to keep me from having the usual author's fit. You know, most authors scream and tear their hair when they see the movie of their book.
So I hear, yes.
Yeah. And the director did a fine job. Were you
part of it?
Not really, because I was undergoing some eye problems, and I couldn't go. They shot it in Pennsylvania.
Uh-huh.
And I was supposed to go out there and, you know, take a cameo part. But I had medical problems, and I couldn't go. And otherwise, you'd see me in the movie sitting on a park bench or something. You know how they do that.
Yeah, that's right. It would have been fun, though.
They shot the film in a place called Kittanning, which is outside of Pittsburgh. And it was a town that looked pretty much like Point Pleasant.
Now, I wonder, John, and I bet you wonder, too, after this movie comes out, if it's a gigantic hit, I wonder what will happen to the number of reports of sightings of Mothman suddenly. I bet they go right through the roof.
I'm willing to bet that, too. And as you certainly know, this is also very contagious. If somebody sees a Bigfoot going through his garbage can, reports it, very soon everybody in the neighborhood sees somebody going through their garbage can.
And there's a couple of ways of looking at that, aren't there? In other words, I'm not even beyond thinking that these things, whatever they are, might even come from us, inside of us, you know, the id.
Well, that was one of the things that I was afraid of, that wherever I went, I might have been causing this. And
there you are.
Oh, when you can imagine my mental state at that time.
Well, in that case, John, think what you're about to cause with the release of this motion picture. Maybe.
Well, what I worry about is...
Hold on. We're at the bottom of the hour here. We'll find out what you worry about in a second. I'm Mark Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
How are you?
I'm all right. How old are you?
13.
13. Since you've gone through, you can make a prediction for 2002. Something you think might happen or will happen. Or I will even accept you would like to happen.
I'll get a really high allowance.
Like how big?
$50 each week.
$50 a week?
Yeah. I do so much around here. One thing, something want to use you. Some of them want to get used by you. Some of them want to abuse you. Some of them want to be abused.
Call Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. And the wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
Regarding the pterodactyl that I picture that I think I put up, the 911 photo, it's up on the website right now. I'm getting a lot of reaction now. Derek in Cincinnati says, I don't know what's in that picture. Bird image from 911. But that sure as hell ain't no bird. Pardon my grammar here. Almost looks like a flying Loch Ness monster to me. Yeah, me too. That's why I put it there. It just hit me. When John said what it resembled, what people say it resembled, and the tragedy that occurred there, And then 911, tragedy, the word tragedy certainly occurred. And then that picture flashed in front of my mind, and oh, man, you've got to see it. So go take a look. It's at artbell.com. John A. Keel will be right back.
Go home.
Good night, Russ.
Uh-huh.
E-file is accurate, secure, and you get your refund in half the time.
Hey, Russ, nighty-night.
Good night, Bob.
So instead of stuffing envelopes and licking stamps like Russ...
Maybe you should try a wet sponge, man.
Thanks.
Tell your tax professional to delete the paperwork and hit send with IRS E-file.
Good idea.
To find a tax professional who uses E-file, visit IRS.gov.
Well, with what I've heard, I can now easily see how this is going to make a really, really, really good motion picture. It's got all the elements. And I'm kind of curious. Of course, Richard Gere is in the movie, but who plays you, John?
Well, there's also Alan Bates, the English actor, in it.
Uh-huh.
And he does a little cameo. He's very good. He plays an eccentric scientist. And I think the Gere character and his character are sort of a composite of me.
Of you.
Yeah, sort of. I like the Alan Bates thing very, very much because he talked just like I talk. I've never met Alan Bates.
What, you did tell me originally that you went down there to look for this winged cat. And so, were you doing all those kinds of stories then?
Oh, yes. I was traveling all over and doing stories about everything I found.
Bizarre, paranormal, that kind of thing?
Well, that and human interest stories. And in those days, there was a big market for human interest stories. And sometimes I would stay up all night and sleep all day because I'd be sitting in a graveyard or some dumb thing, because they were seeing these lights in graveyards. As you know, that's an old phenomenon, and nobody has an explanation really for that either.
It's a current phenomenon too.
It's a current phenomenon.
Yes, it is. And have a group that comes on the program, John, and they do electronic voice phenomena, and I'm sure you've heard of that. And you can hear. God, you hear these voices that they seem to harvest well in graveyards, John.
Well, they've been doing that for several years now, recording voices. And they also, you know, that Radio Luxembourg and places in Europe have been able to get pictures of the dead on television.
No, John, I hadn't heard about that.
Well, it's never gotten much publicity in the United States, but it was a sensation in Europe for several years.
Tell me about it, please.
They have some kind of a system where they arrange mirrors around the TV screen.
Oh.
And when everything is adjusted properly, images of dead people appear on the screen, that recognizable dead people.
Really?
And this was going on for some years in Europe, but I think it's sort of quieted down now.
I've never heard of it. Hey, you reported on that.
I've written articles about that.
Have you seen any of these images?
No, I haven't. A lot of people have. As I say, Radio Luxembourg got involved in this somehow, and they were doing it a lot over there. That's just one of the many strange... I think the business with the voices started with a blind man in England, didn't it?
I don't know.
I think he was a blind man, had a tape recorder. And at first everybody thought that somebody was pulling his leg. You know, they were whispering out through the window or something.
Yes.
But it turned out that many people were able to pick up these voices.
These people that I have on use a lot of careful controls, John. They use only brand new tapes, never recorded on tapes, that sort of thing.
Right.
And what they capture really is totally freaky. I mean, it really is freaky, and they go to graveyards all the time. I couldn't do that. I wouldn't do that. You did it, though, huh?
Because I've been interested for 30 years in a phenomenon in graveyards where the tombstones are knocked over. Now, this sounds like, you know, not very much of anything, but the early tombstones were made to stay erect forever. They had steel rods through their bases.
Right.
In order to knock one of these over, you'd almost need a machine, because they bend the rods inside the tombstone, and it breaks off. And often, well, right here in New York City, we've had occasions where the police would go through a graveyard or around a graveyard, and then they'd come back 2 hours later, and 200 stones would be knocked over.
What?
And unless you have a tractor and a lot of chains and things, you're not going to be able to do that.
So
it's one thing to think teenagers are doing it.
Yeah.
But they're not that interested in hard work.
200 tombstones. So you sat in a graveyard trying to see this phenomena occur?
Well, trying to figure it out, because it never happens when you're there. You know, you leave the graveyard for 2 hours and you come back and things are knocked over. And
that happened to you?
Yes. Yes. And it doesn't just happen in one city. It happens all over the country. And I understand that they've had a rash of this in France.
Any ideas?
I have
asking
no idea.
You speculate, no, huh?
It seems to me that they would need machinery to do it, and that would leave a lot of tracks. And there are no tracks.
Same problem with the crop circles. They never find any tracks.
That's true.
In even deep, very damp... Earth, where there would absolutely be tracks, they don't find tracks. It's very puzzling.
Well, you know, some years ago, that was a big phenomenon in England.
Uh-huh.
And you would, I was over there, and you'd take a train through the countryside, and you'd see these circles in the fields, and just in the middle of nowhere, and nobody paying any attention to it.
Do you think that there are just these areas where these things happen, because these very complex crop circles, and they become, by the way, every year, including this last, more complex and more interesting and harder to figure out. Do you think there are just areas like Great Britain that where these particular things or this kind of phenomena manifests itself?
Well, I think if you had the money to do it, you could examine this worldwide and see if these circles are following a pattern around the world, because they turn up in every country, you know.
Oh, yes, I'm aware.
And, if we could map it out, they never bother with maps, you know, and I'm a map nut. And if we could follow the path around the world, we might find that something like a satellite is doing this.
Maybe. They're finding them, John, in ice and snow and even in dirt and grass. In areas where, you know, you have to look a little more carefully because it's not as obvious. When it, you know, knocks down wheat, it's very obvious. But they're occurring all over the place, John, all over.
Well, I've examined them, and you can't figure out what would do that to the bend the plants over like that.
No.
Of course, there were a lot of hoaxes, too. At one point, college kids were trying to out-hoax each other. But it's pretty obvious that they used a stake in the middle of it and a string or a rope and walked around in a circle.
Yes, and those are obvious, and they're easily detectable, but then a lot of them are not. And you've had to really do the same thing. You did all the reporting on this kind of thing. How did you separate hoaxes? Or did you try to?
I would find a lot of hoaxes, you know, as I traveled around. And there were a lot of hoaxes where people claimed to see something just for the hell of it, and it would turn out that it was a couple of guys, you know, just having fun.
Uh-huh.
But we do have a lot of, one of the mysteries that I got involved in was the mysterious holes in the ground that appear.
Uh-huh.
And these are very deep holes.
Yes.
And you know about those.
I know something about holes, yes.
Yeah. And has puzzled me, because a farmer will wake up in the morning and there'll be this huge hole in his field,
uh-huh.
And no idea of how it got there or what caused it.
Well, I have done some stories. In fact, next week I'm going to do another on an apparent bottomless hole. I mean, truly a hole without a bottom.
Really?
Yes.
You probably don't want to say where it is.
Well, it has been discovered. It's been discovered by the same man who discovered one in Ellensburg or near Ellensburg, Washington. It's a fascinating.
I remember that one, I think.
Do you?
I think so.
That was it was called Mel's Hole, and
did it get press?
I believe it did. Yes.
I think I know about that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's found another hole, and you're telling me you've heard about holes that just suddenly appear.
And in various parts of the world. I remember there was one in Switzerland. And, again, plausible explanations don't work.
No. Not with holes. They're usually there or not. I suppose there could be some sort of geologic movement, and suddenly a hole might be revealed. But aside from that...
Yeah, an underground cave-in or something, but...
Has anybody ever attempted to explore any of these holes?
Oh, sure, there. People have tried to go down with ropes and things, and they give up. Some of these are very, very deep.
That's exactly right. They literally give up. It's so deep. And do these holes then remain for scientific study, or is it your experience something else happens to them?
Well, I guess they just remain. The farmer can't fill them in, or whoever owns the property.
Uh-huh.
And scientists aren't interested in that kind of thing.
But why not?
Because they're afraid of the unknown. They want to be able to explain it. Whatever happens, you know, there are ice caves all over. And these are just holes in the ground that are filled with ice. And they're only, you know, 10 feet down. And nobody knows why it's so cold in there. And we have all kinds of scientific anomalies. And very few scientists allow themselves to look into it.
Well, you know, there's really a good reason for that, and that is because they're all subject to peer pressure, and they're all subject to grant money needs, and when you go and you start investigating apparent bottomless holes and things like that, you get in trouble.
Well, they're also afraid for their reputation.
That's what I mean by trouble.
Yeah. That's a big factor when you're a scientist. You got to protect that reputation, imaginary or real, whatever.
But you'd have to think there would be some, I mean, the a person who turns to science with a scientific mind, at least some percentage of them would say, to hell with you, this is really interesting. I'm going to look into this, but we just don't get a lot of that, do we?
It's happening more with astrophysics than with anything else. The people who are speculating about antiparticles and particles and all that, they're more daring than most scientists, because they sometimes have to put their neck out on a limb here to project their theories.
Yes, you're quite right. There are some out there on the edge, no doubt about it, but the great majority of them seem to live in some sort of small, fearful world that I don't fully understand and doesn't seem to fit my concept of the scientific mind.
Well,
have you had a lot to do, in other words, as you've investigated some of these really anomalous things, have you approached scientists? I mean, obviously, to bolster the credibility of anything you might write, you would think you'd want to have somebody of science involved in some way.
Well, it's not that easy. With the Mothman thing, I was trying to find something that a scientist could look at, and I found some very odd footprints of what looked like giant dog footprints.
Really?
I couldn't get the local university in West Virginia, to do anything about it.
Really?
But these were very strange footprints. They were very, very large. If this was a dog, it must have weighed 500 pounds. And also, on one occasion, I found in the snow next to a road, I found one single human footprint.
One single footprint?
Without shoes, just a human foot.
Oh, no.
I had no explanation for that. If somebody was walking around barefoot in the snow, I would have found other footprints.
But not one.
Not one.
And maybe if a giant a pterodactyl had a human in its mouth and it landed for a moment, one footprint and took off again. Otherwise, I can't imagine how a single footprint would get anywhere.
Well, that's one of the many little problems that you run across in these.
So anyway,
searches.
You know, toward the end of the last break, we were talking about responsibility and that when you get publicity about this kind of thing and you put it in people's minds, inevitably you are going to cause a lot of sightings and a lot of people to see the things this movie is going to bring first to the screen and then, you know, eventually to their TV screens, and they're going to start seeing this thing, John. No question about it.
I imagine they will. And I fear for the people in West Virginia because they're going to be inundated with tourists, and they're not prepared for it. There's going to be first a trickle of tourists, and then maybe by the end of the summer, it'll be Coney Island in Point Pleasant.
Oh, brother.
And there's nothing much I can do about that.
Do they know this is? Do they suspect there that?
Well, I've tried to tell them that now is the time to build hamburger stands and souvenir stores. And you know their economy is not very good there.
Uh-huh.
And we'll see what happens. Well, you know what they did in Roswell. Opened museums. And every year they're drawing thousands of people now.
I'm very well aware. Very well aware. And so that could occur here. This would be really something. The movie opens today, probably in the big cities like Los Angeles and New York and stuff.
No, it's opening nationwide.
Nationwide, all at once.
Yeah. They must have hundreds and hundreds of prints out there.
They must have, yes.
And by curious coincidence, a new reprint of my book is about to appear in the bookstores.
Another gigantic coincidence.
It's unbelievable.
Listen, I know they've been bleeding you dry, John, but I have 1 hour left, and I would like to take this moment to ask you whether, you know, all my guests at this point have a choice to either go to bed, if they're tired, because I know you're on the East Coast, let's see, it's almost 4 o'clock in the morning there, or if you want to stick around for 1 hour, you can answer questions of the audience. I know they'd love to talk to you, but it's your choice.
Well, I'll stay with it.
Will you really?
If you think I can hold up here.
Well, I'm not the best judge of that.
I'm very tired, but I can...
You want to give it a try?
Yeah, let's give it a try.
All right, I know a lot of people would like to speak to you, so stay right where you are, John.
Okay.
Have a cup of coffee.
Right.
All right. John A. Keel, staying up very late with us. And believe me, he's been doing the rounds for the people who are releasing this movie. A lot of publicity. It's like all the time. So for him to spend this much time with us is really, really something. Your opportunity to talk with John A. Keel coming up next. Trade Center burned for almost 3 months, a very, very long time, but not the longest burning fire in the U.S. Find out what blaze has burned a lot longer in the February issue of the After Dark newsletter. You can also read about evidence of UFO activity that's been covered up by NASA and how Dan Aykroyd got involved in the case, plus levitation, nanotechnology, and much, much more. It's all in the February issue of the After Dark newsletter. Call now, 1-888-727-5505 for only $39.95. You'll get 2 free issues. 14 for the price of 12. That number to subscribe, 1-888-727-5505. Or log on to artbell.com. Hit the library link to the secure server.
He made it in some velvet morning when I... Flowers growing on a hill, dragonflies and daffodils learn from us very much. Look at us, but do not touch. Fedra is my
Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye. From west of the Rockies, dial 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. Or use the wildcard line at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Networks.
Now I've learned about the Mothman. John A. Keel is my guest, and in a moment we're going to open the phone lines. Should be something. Stay right there. they're worth every single penny you pay for them and a whole lot more than you pay for them. Whether it's you or, better yet, you and your family, it is a gift well worth the giving. Hi, this is Art Bell. Are you tired of these volatile markets? Well, please listen to me and carefully, very carefully. While stock funds are down, 15 to 25%, gold funds, on the other hand, have been up nearly 30%. That's right. Gold funds have outperformed 90% of stock funds this year alone, but more importantly, top analysts estimate gold for 2002 up 20% over today's prices. That's why some of America's leading brokerage houses are themselves recommending gold now. So what does it mean for you and me? Well, it means we need to look at our investments right now and make sure they're properly divested for protection and growth. That's why you need to call my friends at Lear Financial and request their free gold diversification guide and, oh, their first-rate audio seminar showing you exactly how to recession-proof your savings and retirement with gold. So call now, 800-474-4259. That's 800-474-4259. I have personally benefited from this excellent material exclusively from Lear Financial. In fact, I'm a client, so pick up the phone right now and call 800-474-4259. Back now to John A. Keown. Just before we go to the phones, John, thinking back on everything that happened and how it happened and what happened, how has all of this affected your life? I mean, how has it changed your life? Something like this cannot occur without inducing a major change.
Well, it changed much of my thinking, and after the tragedy of the bridge, it was similar to the World Trade Center thing. I was in shock for 6 months, and I couldn't even think about the stuff in West Virginia for a very long time. I finally wrote the book almost 10 years afterwards.
Huh. It's very cathartic, isn't it, to write a book like that?
Yeah, and unfortunately I had made careful notes all throughout, and I had a vast collection of information that I might have forgotten otherwise. But,
well, I'm glad it's saved, and now with the movie it's really saved.
Yeah, it's who knows what will happen next now. It's hard to tell.
Well, I have some theories about that, John. I think that those windows that you talk about,
yeah,
I think there are more of them lately, and they're more frequent, and things are getting stranger very quickly, exponentially quickly.
I certainly agree with that. Everything is speeding up.
Yes. All right, let's see what we get from the lines. First time caller line, you are on the air with John Keel. Hi.
Hi, it's good to talk to you.
Thank you. Where are you, sir?
I'm in Monroe, Wisconsin.
Where? I'm sorry?
Monroe, Wisconsin.
Wisconsin, okay.
Yeah, back in 64, 66, I figure I was about 8 to 10 years old, and we lived on a farm between Darlington and Schultzburg, Wisconsin, kind of a hilly farmland with small woods here and there. And my father and uncle shared a driveway. We had farms on separate sides of the valley. And I figure I was maybe 1,000 yards from my uncle's hog house.
Right.
And one night I was out playing in the yard, like I say, 8 to 10 years old. And I could have swore what I saw was a man with wings go down behind the fence on my uncle's hog house.
A man with wings.
Yes, a man with wings. It was basically the silhouette, but it was huge. I mean, looking back on it now, I could easily say it was 6, 7, 8 feet tall, according to the size of my uncle's hog house. And I ran in and told my dad. He just got done milking. He was reading the newspaper. He was tired. Yeah, sure. Uh-huh. Okay, yeah. But I told my mom, and she went out and looked, and, of course, she didn't see anything. The next morning, my uncle called us. Where's my litter of pigs? He was missing an entire litter of pigs.
Wow.
Huh.
And my mom said, well, my dad didn't believe me at all, but my mom said, well, are you sure it wasn't a hawk or something like that? I said, Mom, a hawk wouldn't carry off a whole litter of pigs.
Nor would it be eight feet.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it literally covered at least a third of the wall of the end of the hog house. It's unbelievable.
Well,
and I couldn't see any details, but like I said, it was the definite silhouette of a man with wings. And I couldn't believe it. And I think it was something, I don't know how paranormal it is, but I think it's something biological. If, like you had mentioned, windows, something from another world, that's possible, but...
Well, let me ask you one thing. Isn't there a nuclear plant near you, near Monroe?
No, that's...
That's another Monroe?
100 miles away in Illinois, yeah.
Yeah. Well, this is, you know, there are other sightings of men with wings.
Yeah.
And we're baffled by them.
Oh, well, another thing that was interesting, probably 2 or 3 years later, my mom got interested in things like this, and she subscribed to Fate magazine. And lo and behold, you know, 2 or 3 years later, there I read about sightings like this of men with wing chasing cars, so... I was really surprised. It almost verified what I had seen.
All right.
Might have been one of my articles.
It sure might have been. Here's an interesting comment. I get these comments by computer while I'm on the air, John. An obvious scientist from Seattle says, why is it that people misconstrue good science for apprehension? We physicists love the unknown. But science requires that we create a model for any phenomenon. Otherwise, observations are meaningless.
Well, I can't argue with that.
Not technically, but to me, they're not meaningless. And when you hear something like this man just said and things like you said tonight, to me, they have meaning anyway. And they will be explained in a satisfactory way one day to people like this person who's sending me the message, I believe. It's just we're a little ahead of the curve, that's all, John.
Right. I'm interested in the loss of the pigs. This is a very interesting incident.
Well, it would take a little more than a big bird to carry away a bunch of pigs, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Wild Card Line, you're on the air with John A. Keel. Hello.
Good morning, John. Good morning, Art. This is Brian calling from Victoria, B.C.
Yes, sir.
Anyway, I want to speak to two things. I believe the world's sort of a mysterious and strange place at times, as you do. But I wanted to speak, first of all, to the 19th century skylighting incident in Virginia, was it?
What was that?
The one you referenced earlier.
Oh, the sisters, though. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, that's right. Because I was fortunate enough to be outside under dark skies for the Lena meteor storm.
Uh-huh.
And there were several bolides that exploded and basically lit the sky like a close lightning bolt would have.
Well, this was very close to the ground.
When this one went off, it was very bright, and it lit up the area that I was in like day, even though it was a very high-altitude explosion.
Yeah, but things about bolides, though, sir, are that they don't hover.
Yeah.
They don't come down near...
Okay, so this was a sustained light, was it?
Yes, it was bright enough and low enough and there long enough to wake up everybody in the village.
And people would just come out and look at it, right?
Well, at least they'd go to the window.
Uh-huh.
Because it lit up the whole town.
And appeared to be, intelligent, or driven by intelligence, one of the two.
Well, we can't say that at this late date, but I know the meteor shower this last... The last meteor shower was really spectacular.
I saw it, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, but it's nothing like what you described. I saw many meteors enter and a few bolides and
They're all very distinctive, and they keep on going, and they explode, or they, you know, hit the ground, or whatever they're going to do, but you don't mistake them for what you've described.
That's true.
Okay, east of the Rockies, you're on the air with Johnny Keel. Hello.
Hello, is that me?
That's you.
Oh, great. I'd like to tell about a sighting that happened in Norfolk, Virginia.
Go right ahead.
Okay, me and my friends were hanging out in the woods. Like, we went back there to party because it was, like, the only woods in Norfolk. And it was really secluded and stuff. And, I mean, a bunch of us, we were on, like, some drugs and stuff. So, and I was just,
right away that doesn't add to
the story. I know, right. But we were just hanging out, and I started to seclude myself from the rest of the group. And we were all hanging out, like, on this deck. And there was, like, six or seven of us. And I started to just stare off into blank, empty space because, like, that's just what I felt like doing because I was on drugs. And
may we ask which drugs?
Well, we were just doing some pot and stuff like that.
Just pot, all right. Okay.
But I just started to stare off into space, and then these two red eyes, like, met me in the darkness. And I was like, oh, man, that's really freaky.
Yeah.
I saw, like, Satan himself or something, you know. I was, like, really terrified, so I just, like, slid over to my friends, and then I looked, and it was gone. I was like, that was really creepy, you know.
Well, yes, I do know, and I don't, as I said earlier, I don't like red eyes. Red eyes are not good. Now, you know, going back, John, to whether the Mothman was giving prophecy in order to save people, or people were just sensing what was about to happen with this creature's presence, and the creature was the actual perpetrator of the event, is unknown. But you would think that if something wanted, if it could manifest itself in any way, and it was coming to warn us, it would manifest itself in some way that would not scare us to death.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that.
Do you? Have you given a lot of thought to...
I've written books about time and prophecy, because if we can predict the future, that means the future already exists in some form.
Right.
And that's a baffling problem. And I think someday the scientists are going to tackle that one, because the future has to be out there in some form, whether it's electronically or whatever, but there, you know, 15% of the population have the psychic ability to foretell the future. And by all logic, it's impossible unless the future exists.
I have had one absolute premonition. It occurred immediately after I had it, and that's it. Only one. Never been back since. No matter how hard I try, I can't repeat it. It just happened. So you've got to be right about time. I mean, it's one of two things. It's either out there fixed and is simply going to happen no matter what, or we're sort of marionettes on strings, you know, acting out the whole thing down here. I don't know. It is puzzling to contemplate, isn't it?
Well, so many things happened to me that indicated that something or somebody or, you know, was keeping track of me. And they knew before I knew what I was going to do next. And, for example, they would leave messages in a motel that I stopped at. And I didn't know I was going to stop at that motel. And I'd go into the motel, and they would, when they heard my name, they had a stack of messages for me. They were nonsensical messages, but that's pretty odd that somebody knew.
Do you think some sort of madman could have been following you? I mean, what other answer could there be?
I know that occasionally they were following me, because I was going into areas where the government was doing naughty things. They were... You know, they constructed over 90 underground cities in the United States.
Was that nutty or naughty? or
naughty, I guess, because they were wasting a lot of money.
Yeah, I understand our government has built a lot of underground stuff, you know.
Yeah, I've been to three of them. And I,
oh?
There's one in New York State, there's one in Connecticut, and then there's one down outside of Washington.
Oh?
Which has gotten a lot of publicity.
That one I've heard about. They've done some television on that one.
But there's at least one in every state.
Really?
And the one in New Orleans is interesting because it's above ground. It was very controversial. They built a long, what it looks like a concrete worm. You know, New Orleans is sinking.
Yes, it's actually below sea level.
And they had to build this above ground. And the big controversy was at the time they had 100 beds in there for the black people and 1,000 beds for the white people.
Huh.
And this was during the period of the civil rights movement and all.
Right.
And so there was a lot of controversy about that one. But they're everywhere. Outside of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, they were building one when I was there.
Do you think that all of these underground facilities were specifically built for nuclear war or what?
And yes, they were built. I think in the early 60s, they realized we had really no civil defense at all. And
we still don't.
They are required by law to open them one day a year to the public. And they never tell the public what day that is.
Really?
So you have to know somebody who is either working there or has the information.
How'd you get the information to know?
Because I knew somebody who worked there. And when I went there, they have, like, dentist offices.
Yes.
They have all kinds of facilities in these places. They're huge. And when I was there, there were a couple of trucks unloading cases of whiskey. And it occurred to me that if there was a nuclear war, that's one thing we would need. Lots of. But these are huge, and the project must have cost billions of dollars. And now they're probably decaying empty.
I bet the whiskey's still good.
Yeah. Let's see.
Yeah, you'd need whiskey, all right, in case of a big nuclear war. That's eerie stuff, though, underground stuff.
Yeah. But in the 60s, they realized, you know, at that time the Cold War was very hot, and we had really no defense. Like, where would you move all the people from New York?
Well, you can't.
Any city.
But that's what I'm saying. We still don't really have any defense.
Well, if in case of war, they probably would move the politicians into these underground places.
They would.
Yeah.
And you have to contemplate what sort of world it would be if all of the normal people get vaporized and the only ones to emerge from a nuclear holocaust are our politicians, who probably are to blame for the whole damn thing in the first place. What kind of new society rising from the ashes would that be?
It would be frightening.
That is the thought of nuclear war itself. Hold on, John. We'll be right back. John A. Keel is my guest. He's got a very good point there. The phoenix rising from the ashes would get about a foot off the ground and crash. I'm Art Bell.
Comes a variety of interesting guests to his program. Some are names you may not know. Others are names you know very well.
This is Leonard Nimoy. Leonard, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Hi.
Hi.
We have such a short time that I feel obligated to literally pummel you with questions.
Okay, go.
How much chance do you think there really is that we will be contacted?
There are something like 4 billion stars in our galaxy alone. And there are billions of other galaxies. Each of those stars are potential suns just like ours. And that means that if one out of every million of those stars has planets around it.
Heard at 1-775-727-1222. And the wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. To reach out on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
My guest is the author of The Mothman Prophecies, John A. Keel. If you have a question for him, and I can see many of you do, that's what the telephone is for. The Mothman Prophecies motion picture starring Richard Gere and many others is being released today nationwide. I repeat, today nationwide. And so you'll be seeing a story about the life of my guest.
Television. Nearly one century ago, an unspeakable evil was born.
Some houses are born bad. Houses like Rose Red.
Now one team's dream to uncover the truth.
Rose Red is a dangerous place to run psychic experiments.
Will become their worst nightmare. Stephen King's Rose Red. The terror begins Sunday at 9, 8 central on ABC.
As I said, the advertising works, and I'm obviously going to have to see that movie as I am going to have to see The Mothman Prophecies. Once again, here is John A. Keel. It is now going on 5 o'clock back in New York. A man whose blood has been drained by doing interview after interview has spent nearly 3 hours with us now. And soon the sun will be coming up where you are, John.
Uh-oh.
They've got a lot of, you know... Anyway, here we go. Better not say that. First time caller line, you're on the air with John A. Keel. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I have sort of a question, I guess, for your guest tonight.
All right.
When I was about 13 years old, I was going to sleep in my bedroom, and I think I might have actually dozed off, but I woke up and I thought I saw a really huge dark figure in my room, and I actually got out of my bed and I walked across the room and it grabbed me, and it made this ungodly noise, and I screamed at the top of my lungs, and everybody in my house ran into my room and was, you know, wondering why I was screaming. I mean, they thought that somebody had broken in or something.
You're sure you weren't having a nightmare?
Well, I don't really know. I mean, I was standing in the middle of the room, and it was very real, and I couldn't sleep for about a week. I mean, it was really,
gotcha.
Still freaks me out to this day. And about a year later, my sister was murdered. And it's like the day she died, actually, my mother was working in, she's working in her office, and like the front window of her office, like a dove, just flew right into it and died. And it's like, I don't know if those things could possibly be connected, but because of those, you know, incidents, I spent many a night in cemeteries and places like that. So I thought I would call. I never really knew anything about the Mothman prophecies until like this week when I saw some movie stuff on TV.
Mm-hmm.
I really didn't know what it was about until I started listening to your show. So I was just kind of curious. What
well, we live in a really strange world, sir. Thank you very much. On the day my father died, a bat landed on our porch and just stayed there. I mean, this is a sunny summer, desert, hot day. And the day my father died, which was not long ago, a bat landed and just stayed. We finally removed him by hand and put him in a shaded place, and he flew off at night. But such thing has never happened before. He just landed on our porch instead. We live in a strange world, don't we, John?
Yes, we have a whole category for this kind of thing. They're called bedroom invaders. And it's a lot more common than you would think. People wake up and see something in their bedroom.
That's right.
Very often they see a man in a plaid shirt.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't see any sign of whatever he was wearing, did you?
No, he just said dark.
Yeah.
And I have a zillion reports like that, John. Just one after another after another. Some people call them shadow people.
Well, we also know that if you're dreaming and you wake up, the dream overlaps into your real consciousness, and temporarily you see these things. Once when I was very ill, I woke up and saw a giant Coca-Cola bottle in my bedroom.
Really?
And as I watched, it slowly got smaller and smaller and faded away. And that was one of those waking dreams that people have. But
giant Coke bottle, that's a new one.
Yeah, isn't it? I was, of course, taking medication for I had pneumonia at the time, and that probably helped cause
that's,
this.
That's interesting. Wild card line, you're on the air with John A. Keel. Hello. Hello.
Yes, Mr. Keel.
Yes.
Yeah, I just have a comment here. North Louisiana, when I was a kid, I'm 35 now, I came across an area that was just dead. Of course, it's green in northwest Louisiana there. And it looked like the bottom of a lake. It looked like it had just been dead for a long time. And
anything
I visited,
burned in it?
Sir?
Was there anything burned in the area?
It had that feeling. It was all brown.
Was this near
it was
Camp
greenery
Lagoon?
All around it, like in a circle, covering it. Like walk into it to see it.
Was this anywhere near Camp Lejeune?
Well, no. Camp Lejeune is in North Carolina. I was born on Camp Lejeune. I know where that is.
Was that in North Carolina?
Yes, uh-huh.
And there were very strange birds in that area at night that would scream. It would make the hair on the back of your neck stand up.
In a dead area.
It was like a dead area.
How big?
About as big as a medium pond.
Huh.
50 yards.
What
yards.
Year was that?
Probably 79.
Uh-huh.
Also, once, me and my friends used to walk around in the woods there. And once we were walking around in the woods, we came up on a prairie. There's a little farmhouse. And all of a sudden, by the little barn there, a bonfire started up, and there was a group of people standing around it. And three huge luminous balls shot up into the space. So then it freaked us out. We ran back. We knew where the place was, so we took our cars. We were 17 by then. Drove back. Walked up and down the driveway and saw one man walking around the perimeter of the barn, and it had some floodlights, one floodlight on one corner. Then that scared us, so we started running. And when we started running, there were cars all out in the woods, and it must have been like 25 people, and they were all standing by their cars. So we just hightailed it out of there, and as soon as we turned around, all those car lights went out. And then we just left.
Wow.
It sounds like some kind of ritual.
Yeah, it really does, yeah.
But do people do things like that?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a strange area. Y'all were talking about how maybe the on maps and how lands have some kind of connection to strange things. I don't know. It's just a comment.
So. All right. Well, it was a good comment. You have to be absolutely convinced, John, based on what you told me, that our government is really, really well aware that these things are going on. And maybe they don't understand them any better than we do, but they're sure investigating them.
Yeah, I think that's been the case for a very long time. And I would suspect that they're as baffled as we are. And it's a common theory of UFO buffs that this is a government secret. But there's other things going on in the government. I worked in the government for a couple of years.
In what?
Inside the government in Washington. And I worked directly under the secretary of HEW, who was Elliot Richardson at the time.
Oh, of course, yes.
And while I was there, I managed to snoop around a lot from inside the government.
And?
And I couldn't find anything realistic enough to say that there's great conspiracies going on. And everywhere I went, if I brought up the subject of UFOs, all of the bureaucrats would have their own UFO story, which they'd tell me. And I never found it. Only once in the Pentagon, an officer in the Pentagon was talking to me, and I was talking about all of this. And he was on the phone, and he whispered into his phone that there was a guy here that he had to stop. And that's when I was making inquiries into the UFO thing.
That he had to stop?
Yeah, that was his phrase. So I put it in the book.
Oh, did you?
And with his name.
With his name.
Yeah. While I was there talking to this man, a secretary came in with a big red folder marked Top Secret, and she put a newspaper clipping in it. That was probably an entertainment they devised for visitors' benefits.
You think so? I don't know. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with John A. Keel. Hello.
Yes, is that me?
Yes, you.
Yes, this is John in New Orleans.
I'm New Orleans, okay.
Yeah, you mentioned that building. I'm going to look for it. It's funny. I'm just so nice to be in the presence of two such brain powers. Something from Mr. Keel as far as time, but just a quick aside to art. I wonder that Silver Bridge that went down, if only symbolically, from the correct angle, would those two red traffic lights that were left from the correct angle be those two glaring bright red eyes?
Oh, there's something to think about.
I wanted to throw that at you.
Yeah.
From the correct angle, they might be, if only symbolically.
Well, mostly these lights, these eyes were being seen in dark places.
Well, you know what I'm saying. That was for art, but that's a wink.
No, I'm with you. Yes.
But the thing for Mr. Kyle, a dream, concerning the what I term as the past of the future, and that's the only way I can, terminology given to it, the past of the future, because when I was there in the dream, I knew that I hadn't just moved to the future. I had moved through the future and back to the past of that future. And you know how you have, like, the bird in the picture at the tragedy?
Yes.
The perspective, the depth perception of the bird close to or away from the camera.
Yes.
The same with two, let's call them two walls. You have the further wall and the wall closer to you, and the opening between those cannot be seen from the normal angle. You have to get around the first wall
right.
to enter.
That's
and that's
right.
how I entered that time in the dream. And that's the same way I exited it, if you see what I'm saying.
So you believe you've traveled in time?
Not literally. Maybe only in my dream as a concept.
Mm-hmm. Well,
but those are the things that are related to those larger things that are done, allegedly and suspectedly so, for real, potentially.
Yes, but if, as in Mothman prophecies, if in your dream you dream of an event that is going to occur, and that event occurs precisely as you have dreamed, then you should be asking yourself lots of questions about the nature of time itself. Don't you think, John?
Well, I've spent years asking myself those questions, and it's a major mathematical puzzle. There was a book published in the 1920s called An Experiment in Time, which is still in print, I think, and it tells you, it's a very thin book, but it tells you how to control your dreams.
Really?
And if you ever run across that, you know, in a secondhand bookstore or something, the man who wrote it was an aeronautical engineer, and I'm trying to think of his name.
But it's called An Experiment in Time.
Right, and it's a classic work about dreams and how you can control them and how you can move forwards or backwards in time.
Mm-hmm. I don't doubt it at all, written that long ago. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with John A. Keel. Good morning.
Good morning, Art. Good morning, John.
Morning.
Just a while, let's see where to start at. About 2 years ago, I moved into this house and have now left there. But I tried to talk to you last week, Art. I had the bad cell phone. Activity started in the house shortly after we moved in, but we would just hear voices every now and then, like little girl laughter, stuff like that, doors opening and shutting. And it never really got anywhere else until this like last year that it really started picking up and started hearing a lot of heavy footsteps up and down the stairs, different things going on, and it started attacking my girlfriend.
Attacking?
Scratching her? Or?
There was bite marks. It pinned her down a couple of times. And I was kind of like, okay, you know, I'm not seeing anything, so I wasn't really, you know, I thought more of it, you know, something else is going on. So it gets to this point where I start trying to figure out ways to get rid of this or whatever's going on, and I kind of start calling this thing out. Well, right around that time, it was like during a day, she was upstairs putting, we had the stairway, and that's where we seem to hear a lot of the stuff at. And you go up the stairs from this hallway, and then you do a 180, and you go up the stairs again, and then there's like a bedroom, and you turn, and there's like our room, and then take another turn to the right. You keep like circling to the right, and there's a bathroom and another bedroom. Well, there's a deal where we kept all the towels at and stuff, and she was putting towels away, and she turned around, and there was this black figure standing in the stairway looking up at her with these red eyes, and I know you don't like red eyes. It's the night.
You've got a nasty poltergeist on your hands.
Yeah.
How old is your daughter?
Well, actually, this is my girlfriend that's seen this. My daughter's 11, and my son...
Is your daughter jealous of your girlfriend?
No, she loves her with all her heart. So, but then...
John is right. That age,
things start to happen.
Young girls seem to produce poltergeist activity.
Uh huh. So, but this is where it gets really freaky. So I start calling this thing out, and then it was a Sunday morning about 10 o'clock. I had just taken a shower, came back. We were standing in the bedroom, had the radio on. My kids were gone at my folks', it was for the weekend, and there was nobody there but us. And we're in there, we got the door open, all the other doors to that hallway are closed to the stairway, so it's dark in there, and we hear this really heavy thump, thump, thump coming up the stairs, and I'm like, who the hell's in the house? So I look out our window, which I can see the driveway, no cars. So we both turn, and we're looking through the doorway, and here it comes. It's solid black matter, not a shadow. This is pure, I mean, it's got dimension to it, and it's solid black. And I'm just froze, petrified. You know, it's like fight, flight, or, you know, freak out.
Right.
And she's, like, dropped to her knees, and I'm watching this thing, and it just, it hits the top of the stairs there, and it rotates towards us. And I can tell that its head's down, and it's like, I'm thinking to myself, if this looks up and we make eye contact, that's it. We're done. And it starts to come towards the door, and then it just turned to the right, and gone, like a blink of an eye. And she just screams, you know, did you see that? And I'm like, did you see the size of the head on that thing? And I, are you there?
Yeah, listen, I think that you should be sending me some email again, and in some way mark it. So
yeah,
mark something in the header that'll grab my attention.
Right.
Talk to you last night or something or another.
Yeah, it was like last week I tried to get a hold of you.
I'm sorry, it's so many people, so many emails.
What was I going to say here? But that night, I took some pictures in the house, and I got some stuff on film.
Oh, my.
Really?
Yes. We were in the front room. I had a wood stove was going, like 80 degrees in there. She'd went in the kitchen, comes back in, and the room just turned ice cold.
Do you have my email address, sir?
It's, no, I don't have your email
address.
It's
easy. It's easy. ArtBell@mindspring.com. That's just my name, Art Bell.
Yeah, okay.
At mindspring.com.
At
mindspring.com.
Spring.com.
.com. Yes. Would you please email me?
Yeah. But I took several shots, and then there was two that I took one right after the other one instantly. I'd walked over across the room in the front room, and back towards we had three windows, and those are the only ones in the room that the blinds were up, and we counted at least six spaces in the windows. And there's something that is holding this glowing orb that is illuminating the hair on the back of her head.
Ay, ay, ay. You need to just contact me, and I'll have you on the air, sir. All right?
Okie dokie.
All right. Thank you very much. John, what a pleasure to have you on. We're running out of program here.
Right.
That was some story, wasn't it?
Yeah, he needs more help than we can give him in a phone call.
That's right. That's what I think, too. But all you have said, well, today is going to be a big day for you, isn't it?
I hope I can sleep a few hours. But,
are you going to one of the openings?
I'll probably, yeah. If nothing else, I'll go and count heads.
And probably sort of sit in the theater and try and judge what the reaction is like as the movie goes on, I'm sure, huh?
They better not laugh. It's a very serious motion picture here.
I don't think they're going to laugh, John. Yeah. John, it's been a pleasure.
It's been a real pleasure to talk to you finally. And good luck with all of this. And sooner or later, we'll talk to you again.
Yes, indeed. Let's do it again. Thank you, John. Good night.
Thank you very much.
John A. Keel, The Mothman Prophecies. I'm Art Bell. From the high desert, ta-ta. The After Dark newsletter has been reporting subjects that we talk about right here on the show. And just like the show, After Dark has been evolving and changing and keeping folks guessing. You never know what you're going to get next, but it's always a lot of fun. Give yourself a treat and subscribe. Just log on to my website, artbell.com. Go to the library link on the left. You'll find the After Dark link in the menu there. Click, and you can subscribe on the secure server. Or call any time of the day or night, toll-free, 1-888-727-5505. That's 1-888-727-5505 for only $39.95. You'll receive this four-color magazine every month for a year. Subscribe right now, and you'll get two free issues, 14 for the price of 12. Subscribe online at artbell.com or call right now, 1-888-727-5505. That's 1-888-727-5505.